And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here and declare your independence. I'm Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms with an S, Freedoms Phoenix, home. Okay, today is a good day. Let me tell you
what's
actually
did pretty good, actually.
I think so. I get better at that, depending on... Yeah, I tell you what, everybody wants to know how well I do it. Let me tell you what the determining factor is. It's how many seconds before the intro music before I finally get up and ready and sit in the chair. That's what it does. You know, if it's not that good, I haven't been, you know, talking. Hello. You know, yeah, Frank brought in, yeah, Frank Tamburi. It's going to be, a Trump day. We got some other news that's going on. I'll tell you what's going on. Jeff Greenspan was Southwest coordinator for the Ron Paul campaign in 08, and I think he held the same position or close to in 12. He is also heavily involved in Campaign for Liberty, and he's going to come in. He's a good friend behind the scenes. We got a lot of inside baseball of whatever, and kind of we get it. And he'll be in a half hour, and for the rest of the show, and Frank and I, as we grill the living snot out of him, we're going to call him Dr. Greenspan because he's late, okay? So we do that. You know, but Frank was on time, you know, so that's like, you know, so congratulations, you know.
This is not even Thursday.
It's not even Thursday. Okay, now this is why, you know, one thing I want to talk about before. All right, one thing I do not want to talk about is I am not going to go see Star Wars until Saturday with all the family and everything. That was, we had to wait a week just to get to where you have more than two seats together. I mean, you know, it's just ridiculous. But I would imagine that you saw it on a 1 to 10.
Opening night.
On a 1 to 10. Just give me, that's all I want to know.
As a diehard Star Wars fan, I would say, for those of you that are fans,
three!
This is,
three!
No. You don't do it like that. This is how you do it. You do it in order. Here we go. Number one Star Wars film is, to me, Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, I really like that.
After that, and this is controversial, guys. I know. To me, the second best is Revenge of the Sith. And that's probably from a libertarian's perspective. Revenge of the Sith is almost tied with Empire Strikes Back to me. Number three.
Now, wait. Which one's Revenge of the Sith?
That's the one when everyone gets whacked at the end. When Padme says, this is how democracy ends, with thunderous applause.
So, number three.
The last one that Lucas did, right?
Yeah, that was dark, man.
That was dark, but
God, you don't take your kids to see that one.
No, that was the only one that was PG-13, actually, and that was pushing their R. But, any case, Empire Strikes Back is best. Revenge of the Sith is number two. Number three is A New Hope, which is, you know, to us old timers, the original Star Wars. After that, I would put for me probably the Clone Wars and probably this new film, Force Awakens, close with the Clone Wars. And then tied for last is, you know, Phantom Menace, Return of the Jedi. I have to say, I like Phantom Menace a lot more than most people. Again, from a libertarian's perspective.
I liked it. I thought it was a good start. Liam Neeson doesn't suck.
Well, you know, this is, I don't want to get, yeah, we're talking Star Wars, and maybe we're getting to, I mean, this is a political show, but you know,
The
Phantom Menace is so underrated, I think. You know, what's astounding is hearing everyone, you know, complain about the old prequels and how this new movie with Harrison Ford's in it, and we're back to, this is original Star Wars, we're having fun, it was Han and Chewie, we're home, oh, and all this kind of stuff. And they always complain about the prequels, and people said that they knew the prequels were wrong when they watched the opening crawl of the first movie, Phantom Menace. And it starts talking about, you know, tax federations and trade negotiations, and people are like, oh my God, even the opening crawl is all wrong. This is not Star Wars. We should be having a good time. All this tax, blah, 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 blah. And I'm thinking, you idiots.
The whole thing was
political. That's the whole point. It's the Phantom Menace. How do you think politicians get it over you right now? They don't sit there and they don't sit there and advertise it with purple neon how they're screwing you over. They do it through the weeds. You know, we just had recently in the last debate, you had Cruz versus Rubio, and they were talking about this issue. We don't get too much into debates, but you know, talking about the immigration and that Rubio was part of the Gang of Eight and he was for amnesty, and how Ted Cruz tried to poison the pill of the bill and voted, put something in there, injected something, an infection, in order to try and take out that bill because the Gang of Eight was trying to force amnesty down our throats. These are Republicans. Now, they were discussing this on the debate. And then afterwards, of course, Chris Christie gets on there and he says, I don't know what you guys are talking about. This is all gobbledygook, you know, mumbo jumbo. We have to talk about what the people want. People want security and people want politics. You know, so Chris Christie's trying to be the populist, the out populist Donald Trump. But people are angry or frustrated saying that Rubio and Cruz were get too much into the weeds, into the policy. But this is my point. It's the policy.
That's where that happens.
That's where it happens. That's how they get you. That's what the Phantom Menace was all about. That's why the opening crawl, George Lucas, the brilliant genius he is, was trying to make the point. The Phantom Menace is when you take this gobbledygook little subsection part B of the Robert's Rules of
Robert's
Order.
Rules of Order.
Robert's Rules of Order. And that's how they get you. That's how they get you. That is the Phantom Menace. And the fact that Star Wars fans are sitting back going, oh, this is a boring. I want Han Solo. Well, you know, you got Han Solo, and there he is, an old generic adventure for J.J. Abrams. Because when you have $4.2 billion, you know, product you just bought from George Lucas down in Cancun, you're not going to screw around with it. So J.J. Abrams, the bottom line of Star Wars was basically a checkoff list. This is what the modern fan wants. We want the Millennium Falcon? Check. We want, you know, feel-goodism? Check. We want laser battles? Check. We want, you know, blah, blah, blah. I want to spoil things. Check, 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 check. Nothing was original about it. It was just kind of a rehash, making it safe.
Just had to get to check all the boxes so you can get to number 8.
And number 8. Exactly. So and toys. Toys.
Did it lead up number 8? Got the big number 8 coming?
Absolutely. And, you know, I hope...
Now I don't want to know anything.
I hope... Hey, by the way, this is something for you. So we're talking until Jeff gets here. There is, guys, go ahead and Google this. I thought this was a joke, and I'm a diehard Star Wars fan.
I read the books
and the comic books. All I'm saying is check out Jar Jar Sith Lord on YouTube. There is actual evidence that Jar Jar Binks was actually the ultimate Sith Lord of this entire thing. He's the mastermind behind everything. And I'm telling you what, I'm starting to believe it. And maybe episode 8, you'll find out that the new Sith Lord is going to be Jar Jar Binks. That would be great.
Oh, that wasn't a spoiler. Okay. All right. This is what I got to show you. All right. It's a minute, 44 seconds.
There it is. So it is. Landing legs should be deployed about 10 seconds or so. That is a view from the landing pad.
There you go.
That is that first
SpaceX last night launched 11 satellites. They went the orbit come got somebody mission. Who cares? Now here it comes down. The first stage landing at Cape Canaveral.
Target.
Boom!
Unbelievable. That's the next giant step right there.
Landing operators moving at procedure 11.163 LZ1B net.
And there's after the SpaceX lands, 9 engines recovered, the whole first stage. Hey, refuel that bad boy and go again. This, literally, 100 to 1. This is like, you know, it's going to be 1% of the cost now to relaunch. It's getting, you know, when Elon already now is undercutting them by a gazillion dollars. Now he's recovering the first stage, 9 Merlin engines. I am just, and there is some, you know, secret family behind the connection of SpaceX kind of, I can't tell you.
Where's NASA?
But, you know.
Where's NASA? I want to know. How many years did we give them of taxpayers' money? How can they pull this off?
Yeah, but I got a space shuttle.
In the 70s. Collecting dust
and
in the Smithsonian.
Space shuttle.
Dust in the
90s,
Smithsonian.
Space shuttle. 2000, a space shuttle.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Spaceship One!
Zero.
You know, this was my sons were there with me and some listeners of the show. I made a big deal for almost a year about Spaceship One going up, being the first civilian in space without any government money. That was part of the deal. Could have no government subsidizing, and it would go. What you're seeing in the video, this is the live coverage of the engine going. This is as the first one is coming back. You know, and they're keeping track of it. You know, they've got the... You know, it's one thing. SpaceX, they take cameras with them on the ship, inside the ship, around the ship, kind of ship. We're going, I'm going to see exactly where the sabotage happened. You know, somebody's going to... If they do something, a bomb goes... We want to know where and who did... Or they just want to, you know, telemetry, you know, check everything. But my sons went to Spaceship One, Government Zero, the first civilian... in space without government money, and that was an adventure. That was an adventure and the beginning. And of course, it inspired them. You know, both my sons, one of my daughters works at Honeywell Aerospace, so you know, and they don't really keep track of this stuff, but I do, and I just keep sending them, you know, stuff. Like last night when I got home, we went. Yesterday was the winter solstice. It's also birthday of God, whose birthday is it? I think it's my nephew's birthday, and he got married last night, you know, in Prescott. So the whole family went up there and kind of, you know, and had a great time. Now, what am I checking? Right when the wedding is, I mean, they just finished their vows, is right when this was supposed to be done. Okay. So I'm going, okay, it's time to check the phone. Boom! It landed. Excuse me. It landed. I go, it landed. They go, Dad, it's what I go, spaceship. I go up to my nephew, John. And I said, hey, I just want you to know, not only is it the solstice, not only is it your birthday, and I'm pretty sure it's his birthday. I think I said his birthday. I go, not only is it your birthday, it is also when the world changed. Because recovery of it, let's put it this way, it only cost a boost to space, to get into orbit, it only cost fuel. And that's nothing. I mean, it's nothing. So I'm going, and this, and recovering was not even part of the mission. They just wanted, they put 11 satellites up. So they go, yeah, we got 11 satellites. Oh, by the way, hey, we brought the rocket ship back. And they paid how much? You know, but it's still a lot less there. So I just want to make sure you guys understand, this is the beginning of something totally different. And I tell you, from my perspective, we're going to space. And government's not invited, okay? I just want, you know, once we get off this little bitty blue rock, and it's all 360 spherical, go into the black that way, and what are they going to do? Oh, they just passed a law, and this has been building up. There's one company called Planetary Resources, and one of the big names is Cameron. You know, what's his first name? The guy did Avatar, David.
James.
James Cameron. James Cameron is one of the guys in this Planetary Resources, but the other guy, I think, like, Thiel's in it and a bunch of other guys, gazillionaires. And what it is they have put up satellites using SpaceX and others. They have satellites, and they're doing spectrometry. They're finding out what the asteroids are made of, okay? Let's put it that way. They go out, and they take the spectrometer satellites, and they're getting what these different asteroids are made of, and they go, that one has a high degree of platinum, palladium, or whatever unobtainium they want, and they're going to capture asteroids and mine them. Well, I'm going, okay, what's that sound like? The first aliens. We're in trouble, man. You know, so they're going to mine asteroids. Well, what did Congress do? Congress comes up, they go, hey, is that legal in space? You know, out in the middle of the God knows. See, I didn't know there's a lot of near-Earth asteroids. There's a lot of asteroids that share our orbit or come in round and close and by. You don't have to go to the asteroid belt, you know, between Mars and Jupiter to go get them. I mean, there's plenty of them right around here. I did not know that. So that's why we have our friend Terry Bressy, University of Arizona, Skywalk, Space Watch, whatever it is, at Kitt Peak. That's what he does. He's trying to, you know, keep us from being dead. So we got to know what's out there. And fortunately, now the Earth, Gaia, Mother Earth, has created what? Human beings with the intelligence to be able to save it from mass extinction. We are the antibody. Everybody's, humans are going to destroy the Earth. Oh, really? What happens when big-ass asteroids come and we're all going to die? What happened? After all this recycling and all this, you know, dead Earth and extinction event of whatever, came up with little mammals, go out there and we're going to take care of the Earth because we can. All right? So now what do we got? We're going to go get the asteroids, and we got, you know, Congress to say, oh, yeah, now you can do it. We're going to protect your property rights. It's legal now. Really? So what am I going to be out in space and wait for the Alliance cruiser to come out and protect my property rights? That's what's going to happen? Yeah, I'm going, really? I'm
going, so, Ernie. So I want to mention, as far as with space,
really?
With space, you know, I think one of the follies of NASA is not to humanize and advertise what our program has been. I mean, here you have SpaceX, and they've got these videos that look like MTV. And watch right now, they have these young hosts. There's these two white guys and a young black American. They're all sitting there, and the three of them are journalists. And it looks like an MTV infomercial, and they have graphics. People are celebrating. I mean, you never see this with NASA. I have to point out also, you know, NASA has missed the opportunity to sell. I mean, first of all, sell the excitement of space. I mean, I was all set to, I think I mentioned on the last guest we had, she was from the Air Force, and I was accepted to the Air Force Academy myself back in for Colorado Springs. Of course, I chose a different direction because they wouldn't accept my ponytail, I guess, in the Air Force. But I was all set to go. I mean, I was one of those kids. You know, I had perfect grades, and I wanted to work at NASA, and I was going to be either an astronaut or work at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. I mean, I was all set to do all of that, and there was no excitement. I mean, this is just from the days of the Voyager. But if those of you that get a taste of what we're about to do with SpaceX, not just the technology, but the way it's being sold. And there we go. I mean, I'm excited to listen to this. I mean, I don't even need coffee listening to these guys. I mean, that's our future. That should have been us 20, 30 years ago.
20, 30 years ago!
Absolutely. And you know what? Guys, if you have Netflix or if you have access to the internet, there is a movie. I'm trying to remember the name of the movie here. There was a gentleman named Richard Garriott. Have you heard of him? Richard Garriott. Richard Garriott, there's a video about him. He is the designer and programmer of a very popular video game that most of you, anyone dealing with Bitcoin out there, know I'm talking about. It's called Ultima. Have you heard that, Ernie?
No.
This is Ernie's not so cool. Ernie's cool card just went down the drain right there, guys. I understand. I'm here to help him out. But anyway, Ultima is up there. It's sort of like the ultimate role-playing game that Street Fighter and Pac-Man. That's how big it is. Anyway, he's the designer of Ultima from like 20, 30 years ago. He's a multimillionaire. He became a space tourist. And he wound up going on the Soyuz, paid for his way up to the space station.
I remember this guy.
And he made
$40 million
video, a movie. A documentary of his whole journey up to the space station and back. He filmed it. It is so riveting. You feel like you're there. That should be what NASA's doing to advertise our taxpayer program, for God's
sake.
Damn
Soviets being capitalists!
Yeah. So you've signed the Shire Society.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Heck, Greenspan's not here still, slacker. Okay, that means we get to watch the trailer for Man on a Mission. Okay.
The actual.
Please welcome Richard Garriott.
I'm a computer game developer.
We think of him as the godfather of virtual world.
Satellite and second stage moving.
Your father had the right stuff, but in my opinion, you have even writer stuff.
Okay, now wait a minute. I got another. We're still playing SpaceX here. Yeah, we got to turn that one off. We got too many space movies going on. All right, here we go. Now, this is, go ahead and introduce this.
Right. So this is Richard Garriott. I mentioned towards the last break. He's the founder, producer, owner of the video game series called Ultima, which if you play video games, you know what I'm talking about. And anyway, he sold his fortune. He did Ultima. I don't know what we're up to. Ultima 6 or 10 or whatever they are. I'm not sure if they're making new ones.
Europe.
But in any case, Ultima is a huge game, a wonderful game. And he sold the rights, or he cashed in a lot of his paychecks. He's a very quirky guy, kind of unlike Ernie and I. He wears black and he has all sorts of really fun things in his house. They do a tour of his home. Anyway, a bit eccentric. He decided, well, what else can I do with my money? I know. I'll go to outer space. Space tourism. So he decided, went to NASA, and he asked if he could hitch a ride, and they said no. He said, well, how much for the ride? I'll pay it. No. All right, well, screw that. So he decided, let me go talk to the Ruskies. After all, they're our transportation in space. He goes to the Russians.
Hard money?
The Russians, the non-capitalist people trying to take us over, like Putin.
With jeans and Marlboro cigarettes?
Russia, the place, the only place that takes in, a Snowden, the person talking about independence and rights and private beliefs. And so they take in Snowden and we kick him out. But anyway, so Russia, the anti-capitalist country, they say, oh, how much money? Sure. I don't know how much it was, 10 million or 50,
no,
whatever
it was.
It was
like 40 to 80. It was some ridiculous amount.
It was some amount of money. But, he made tons of money. He had nothing else to do with
always,
it.
Yes.
I mean, he had a bunch of cats at his house and whatever, so he decided to go to space. So he decided also to document the entire journey, everything from, for instance, he was forced to learn Russian. He spent 6 months just learning Russian so he could go on this flight. It was mandatory to be on the Soyuz probe. Anyway, the entire flight from beginning all the way up to when they cracked open the airlock and he was greeted by the Americans up in the space station, he sat there and he showed you around. He showed you his quarters. He showed you what it's like to eat. I mean, I have been following NASA. As I said, I wanted to be an astronaut back in the day, and I was pretty close to going that direction. And I had never seen, of all the videos I saw in the NASA PR pieces, nothing coming close. I used to dream to watch and see, like a reality show almost, from space. We paid for it. Show the excitement of space. And this gentleman decided to do what NASA and all their billions of dollars couldn't do. They can't find one marketing genius to pull that off. But they got Richard. Well, Richard did it on his own through the Russians. So anyway, he filmed it, made a documentary. It's on Netflix now. I believe it's still on Netflix. But in any case, here's the trailer for a fantastic movie that really make you, by the time you get to watch this movie, you honestly feel like you were there. You
Olsen
honestly feel like
you visited the International Space Station October 2005 as a paying passenger aboard a Russian Soyuz spacecraft. His ticket, which cost about $20 million at the time, was brokered with Russian Federal Space Agency through the Virginia-based firm Space Adventures. Is this the same guy, Olsen?
I don't know if that might be the guy that owned the company. The kicker is Americans and NASA didn't want him to go. The Russians are the ones that helped him.
Is it Gregory Olson? Is that who? No, that's a different guy.
It's Richard Garriott.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking. It was a lot more. This guy is 20 million. I think it was more. It was something ridiculous. Anyway, let's go ahead and watch the trailer here real quick, and you kind of it's just
to rewind it.
Yeah. 1 minute thing.
Yeah, it's real quick.
All right, here we go.
best documentary feature.
Says. Man on a mission. A must.
Please welcome Richard Garriott.
I'm a computer game developer.
We think of him as the godfather of virtual world.
Your father had the right stuff, but in my opinion, you have even righter stuff. $30 million.
I will launch and become the first second-generation American astronaut. This entire year, I've been in Star City, just outside of Moscow, training.
This is the goal that I have really been working towards for 20 to 30 years.
The view is going to be fantastic, and you'll remember it for the rest of your life.
And he had to be thinking that. He goes, you know, it was January 12th, 2012 that this came out. I never heard of it. You know, why did I not hear that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I tell you why. This is what happened. When we went to Spaceship One, when they did Spaceship One, Government Zero, we had 15 gazillion reporters there from all over the world because we were the only one with signs, you know, and having fun, whatever. They're interviewing us from all over. That picture went, it's like China Daily. It was all over Europe. It's everywhere except the United States. It was only in the next month. It was something like Variety and in Popular Science. It got a little bit of coverage, and they talked about it. And I tell you why. The media is so controlled in this country. If it didn't benefit the government or whatever, the only time that it started getting press was when NASA came out and said something about it. Oh, well, we're welcome, kind of, you know, in the press release of, yeah, and they, damn it, you know. And I'm going, this is what I look at this, and I'm going, there's something, I no more clear. And my sons, they were there, I got it. Now, they had done different political events that they'd gone to, and we'd run home and watch the news, and I go, you got to watch the news of what they say happened. You were there. Remember what happened? We go watch, they go, that's not what happened. I go, yes, ding, 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 ding. You get it. When we had the first private, 10, 15 minutes, Jeff Slacker. All right, anyway, he'll be here when he gets here. We can talk about him. The when we would see firsthand things, and then you see what they report, you have to look at why would they do that? Who did that? What decision was made? And when you have the first civilian in space and come back and land a reusable spacecraft, I mean, there's 13,000 people out in the middle of the desert with no publicity, really, just showed up. They were shocked when they paraded it because their hangar was way from where everybody was allowed out in the desert to stand. They didn't know all those people were there until they went out to launch. Mm-hmm. And when they took off, they went, holy crap. So they came back and landed and paraded it in front of the crowd, pulling it with a pickup truck. You know, we had like six signs. I ran with one of them. I knew which one I wanted. Spaceship One, Government Zero. We had, you know, you can't hear the government scream in space, you know. Government's lost in space, you know, that kind of stuff. We were having fun. So we go there. Spaceship One, Government Zero. Burt Rutan ran over. And you see it in the documentary that Discovery Channel did. He runs over and grabs it from me at the fence line. He didn't ask. He just grabbed it. And he goes, I need this to send a message to the media. And I go, well, I got more. I mean, you know, so he ran off. And then we took our signs, and we all went to the billionaire after party in the hangar. We just kind of walked in with our signs. Yeah, we're with the band, you know, whatever. Yeah. We just walk in. Well, this was huge. Not a word. Now, it all came out later and so on after everybody, you know, kind of, you know, they always spin the news on the olds. They don't break news. The rest of the world did. So this one was SpaceX. A little difficult for them to keep that secret. But right now, you know, we've been doing busy and Christmasing and making stop war signs and all that kind of stuff. So Gina and Donna are now putting in a bunch of stories this morning. I haven't even looked. I wonder what the coverage is. Did they even mention it?
I didn't even see it this morning.
Is it on CNN, Fox, any of those?
No.
Why?
No.
Why?
On Unbelievable.
Why? Yep. We're going to talk about why when Jeff gets here.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
Listen to LRN.FM on any phone, anytime. 213-493-0309. That's 213-493-0309.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Lies, uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies. Let me tell you what a lie is. There's lies by omission. Big, giant, humanity-changing things, inspiring generation next of whatever, and they just like, nothing to see here. Move along. And I'm going, really? Okay.
Somebody say lies.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, now this is, Hillary laughing. We watch the debates. Gary's always got that going on.
Help it.
So he got one for my mother-in-law. I think Donna's shipping that to her.
I hear lies. I just see her. I can't help it.
That's a real laugh of hers.
Oh, enough. She's a sociopath. I'm telling you, she's a sociopath.
That was amazing. That was after they talk about, we killed Bin Laden or something. She went into her maniacal. I ain't going, wow, that is scary. Give me the button.
So
one video we're looking at a Earth rise from the moon. How'd they do this?
Yeah, so there's two pictures. I wanted to just consider it maybe a nice Christmas gift, or just to be able to see the holidays, beauty of our planet. Interesting, the first picture ever taken of the Earth from the moon was taken on Christmas Eve by, I think it was Apollo, I think it was like 10
or
10 or 11, one of those.
11 was the first one on the moon. Neil Armstrong.
Yeah, well, yeah, but
I think it was the first one, or was it one of the, anyway.
It was before they landed. It was before Apollo 11, so it was like Apollo, maybe it was 10 or 9.
Oh, so it was from a robot or something.
No, but remember, the first Apollo ships, they were in stages, so like Apollo 7, 8, 9, 10, orbited. They all went around, they did orbits, like one went up and orbited around the Earth.
So they took a picture not from the ground, not from the moon surface.
Right. So the first one from the Earth that looked very much like this was taken from the orbiter that went around the moon, and it was taken on Christmas Eve. As a matter of fact, he wound up reading from the book of Genesis as he went around the moon and took this picture. It was the first time that human being, let there be light.
I remember that.
That was beautiful. We should play it maybe for Christmas when we do our Christmas show. But anyway, that picture was taken. And then eventually they took a picture from the moon, Neil Armstrong and a few others since then. But the resolution was not that good. And, it always had looked at that gray, it looked a little washed out pictures. Well,
it's pretty good, though.
It was pretty good, yeah. But take a look at this one. This picture was just released a few days ago by NASA. And it was from one of our moon landers. Of course, is it ours or is it the Chinese Jackrabbit lander that's there? But who knows? Anyway, maybe we intercepted. We just said it's ours. But anyway, but this rover picture was just released. And look at the resolution, the beauty, the blue hues. There's a saying, and this is talking waxing a little philosophical, but there is a famous, or we're not sure exactly who said this, but it was a Greek philosopher. And he said that there were three events that could happen to a human being that would forever change their view of humanity. And this is a deep philosophical concept. Three events that happen to your life. Number one is to be a soldier during a time of war. Number two is to become a mother. And number three was to become a physician. It's one of the reasons I learned, when I learned about that, it was kind of an impetus for me to become a physician, because I couldn't be a mother and I wasn't going to be in the military. But it certainly, it changes your view of humanity. And as much as that Greek philosopher cannot live in today's world, many people who know that quote have added a fourth. And that fourth event that can happen to a human being and change their outlook forever is to be in space. Because every astronaut, every person who's been in space has said the same thing, is that their view of who they are has changed profoundly being in orbit, and especially in the moon, to those that were to the moon. So it's something that I think all of humanity will eventually experience. That's something that might be an option for all of us. So I think it's a very profound nature. And I've heard, you know, from the astronauts and their visions, you can kind of see through their eyes a little bit as their eyes glaze over talking about being on the moon and how vivid it was.
So and you're saying we went to the moon.
No, it was all Stanley Kubrick. It was
hey,
all
man.
Ruse.
I, you know,
oh, come on. Don't start
my
that.
My son-in-law, he's going, no, we haven't been. I said, you know what?
Oh, jeez.
You know what? We're going to find out.
Yeah. This is all George Lucas CGI here.
We're going to find
so
out
we're
really
find
soon,
out.
Man. We're just going to go.
There's a bunch of aliens on there. So anyway, the point is you can
look,
see.
There's the lander room.
You can see how vivid this picture is. And it's kind of what I have imagined that it must look like. And we're getting a taste for once of really what it might have looked like from the moon. Anyway, that's picture. Enjoy. We have it on Freedom's Phoenix. And there's another picture. I don't know if you can pull up real quick. There we go. So this other picture is a sunset. It is the most expensive sunset ever taken. It is also the first sunset ever taken on another planet. And this is from Mars. This was taken in, I think, 2004, 2003, something like that. It was by the Phoenix lander. Speaking of Freedom's Phoenix, the Phoenix lander actually, it landed at the pole, at the North Pole of Mars, looking for water on Mars, which it did find. It was the first probe to find some water, frost under the surface. Anyway, what was unique about this picture is that it was not designed to take a sunset picture. You see, the sun, when it's overhead, fuels the solar panels, so it runs. And when the sun goes low down, they close up the solar panels because they don't want them open in case dust blows on it. Then the next morning, they can't run the probe. But enough people said, you know, we really want to see, again, God forbid, we want the American people and humankind to be excited about this. They decided to take a chance. When the weather was low, I mean, not too much wind, they kept the solar panels open, got just enough energy to pull off one photograph and send it home. And that's it. The first sunset ever from another planet. You can see how distant the sun looks from there. So that was one of the most beautiful pictures I find.
You know, Jeff finally decided to grace us. And I just thought what you missed is that SpaceX, the first stage, went and landed at Cape Canaveral, the first stage, all nine engine they saved last night.
Awesome.
It's all different now. I know people don't, they're not going to understand this. They're not going to realize the big difference, because I've been through a lot of different things that's happened. Oh, and this is a picture just taken from the moon. It's only been like 40, 50 years since the last one. Seriously.
Yeah, I know.
This is government, man. You know, I'm just going to get out of the way. It's like, you know, I gave a presentation at Anarcopoco. We're going to be going again in February. And Mark Victor's presenting, you know, Kokash and myself and, you know, a bunch of names. Lot in the freedom movement, no. But last time I just did why I'm so optimistic. And one thing I'm just like, where's my Jetson car and what technology is coming in space? And I talked about this. I go, SpaceX, you know, by the time next year, it's going to have done this. Well, they finally did it, you know, in the same year. I'm like, phew, I got that prediction off. But the thing is, I'm going, but what did government do? I go, in the 70s, they gave me the space shuttle. I show a graphic of the space shuttle, you know, rocketing up. And then in the 80s, they gave me a space shuttle. 90s, space shuttle. You know, 2000, space shuttle. 2010, space shuttle. I go, this is government innovation, okay? So I'm going, as soon as Spaceship One announced that they were going to be doing that, Burt Rutan and Paul Allen, you know, funding it. Of course, to win $10 million, it cost them 20. But, you know, so I'm going, this when that happened, I go, here we freaking go. And then here came Tesla. I mean, you know, Elon Musk, same thing, you know, whatever. So here comes Elon Musk, and he goes, well, how come Why is it so expensive? I can't. How much does aluminum cost anyway? He's like, seriously? I'll just do this myself. Boom, shakalaka. Boom. You know how many Tesla cars they make a day?
Uh-uh.
It's 600 to 800 a day.
Really?
Yeah, they're putting them out like cell phones. I mean, it's a, you know, they just said, yeah, we'll just make robots bigger.
Did you happen to hear that Apple's this close to buying up Tesla?
Really?
Yep. Yep. The first integrated computer car. The two of them are this close to
I'm not sure I feel all kinds of warm and fuzzy. Yeah. Might as well just be Minority Report.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's time to ship you back to home base. You've been being too green.
Siri, today. I need some gas. Siri, I need a quick trip to QT.
Okay. Well, grease pans, and so we'll get to the, you know, the philosophical Trump GOP campaign for love of Lucian, whatever the heck discussion for the next couple of hours, because I'm telling you, there's a lot of stuff going on that we need to pay attention to here on Earth. So we can leave! So we can leave! I want to be able to, at least. What happens? We get into the black, you know, once you go, maybe you're not coming back. You get into the black, and it's just, the Alliance cruiser going to come, you know, protect your property rights? Are you a Yankee train? You're going to have cannon, ion cannon on your Yankee cruiser Corsair ship. Yeah? Huh? Huh? You think I'm kidding? I'm not kidding. Oh, yeah. And Star Wars. Nobody's allowed to say anything about Star Wars. I don't get to see it until Saturday when all of us family can go. We're going to go. So until then, everybody shut up. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, except Mr. Greenspan is, you know, kind of fearful. He don't want to talk about a lot of stuff because he knows a lot of stuff about a lot of stuff. And he goes, no, not that. Well, we're going to talk. Well, not that.
It's the robots and the clones.
It's the clones.
The robots and the clones.
Okay, robots and clones.
That's coming.
But what, all right.
You're going to need that rocket.
Okay. Well, one thing real quick. Have you been watching the GOP debates?
As little as I can, but yes, I have.
I knew. Anyway, as we're throwing popcorn at the screen, okay, you know, there was a good friend of ours brought a friend of his. They live at Sun City West, which is the active community. And he brought, they always say, you say Sun City, no, Sun City West. I went, okay, you know, less something, you know, more something. So they have a friend, John, that they brought. And he's just like, well, I see why you bunch of libertarians are doing well. It's a GOP party. He wants to check this out. So he came to the Christmas party and he came to the debate party. And he just didn't know what to think. You know, just as we're yelling, even at Rand. I mean, come on, Rand, say it, you know. So I'm wondering, from you watching the debates, having been through a lot of, I mean, I've known you've been, you're one of those, you know, Robert's rules of point of order at the convention kind of guy, okay? You run conventions, you ran, you know, Ron's very successful efforts here in Southwest and a lot of the states. And I remember you were in, you know, in Des Moines, you're involved. And I'm going, from your perspective, as you watch certainly this last debate, what was your feeling? What did you think was going on?
You want my real...
War! Yeah, go.
You really want my opinion. Okay. So,
oh, by the way, did we do a proper introduction for Jeff? Does everyone know who he is?
Yeah, I just did.
All right, well.
So, disclaimer first, lifelong Republican, paleo-conservative, which means a real conservative, the pre-FDR, pre-Great Society conservative. But anyway, I'm not quite sure who the real candidates are. So, up on stage, there's 1 to 2 actual candidates. The rest of the candidates are fundraising. And the brilliance of Trump, I think, is that he's really just making money. I mean, he's doing what he does best, right? As long as people want to do it, they'll keep paying for it. He'll keep doing it. And what he's found is the more outrageous he can be, the more money he raises. Now, here's how it works. Presidential election commissions are incorporated companies. Once you drop out of a race, you can roll your PEC, Presidential Election Committee, money into a PAC. PACs are also incorporated companies. What most of the candidates do, what all pretty much everybody you see on the screen does, is they all have PACs. And so they drop out of the race, roll their millions from their PEC committee into their PAC, and they're all on the board of directors. And so are their kids, and so are their families. And so are their friends. And out of the pack, they pay themselves salaries as directors of the board. They can pay a salary out. Well, it doesn't run out. Then they go on book, write a book, and then they go on tours and speaking and raise more money. But basically, they pay themselves and their families salaries, directorship salaries out of the pack, and expenses for whatever, for in perpetuity, is their goal, right? So Donald Trump's doing what he does best. And what he's found is he didn't think it'd go this far, for sure. Is the more outrageous he is, the more money he raises. And so, why not be even more outrageous? Raise even more money. This is a business. I mean, let's be clear.
Reports of him making money?
Well, look at the PEC reports on opensecrets.org or on the government website, whatever.
Oh, I get to see how much Trump money made.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what does that say? How much does he raise?
I haven't looked at the reports. But my point is that...
He's profitable. He hasn't spent any.
People need to understand, this is a business. Each individual guy is running two corporations, their PEC corporation and their PAC corporation. They are raising millions of dollars as a business and using their approach that you see in the debates and in the papers or whatever on TV to raise the money from which they will pay themselves and their family salaries and expenses, they hope, forever. And sometimes multi-generationally.
Yeah, I was saying grandkids.
Yeah, they're grandkids too.
Or grandkids-in-law.
They're there, to be clear, they're there to raise money. And Donald Trump is... And, you know, I have to admire the man. If people believe what he says... That's their problem. But I have to admire the man. He's making money. He's doing what he does best, making money. And that's what he's there to do.
Okay. You know, and Frank wanted a more lengthy introduction for you, more than just your role in the Ron Paul campaign. You know, who are you, Jeff? You know, you came from, you know, you're like... Donna's raising your mic here a little bit.
Thank you there.
Okay. Now... You came from Pennsylvania, so, you know, from the stomping grounds over here, these guys, Don's from Pennsylvania, that's where you kind of cut your teeth, and you started this, I remember talking, so I don't know how much you want to say, but I'll say it. Jeff, coming from Utah,
I grew up here, Arizona.
Arizona.
But I went to University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, I got an economics degree, which is where I first learned a Dr. Ron Paul, because I was in these economics conferences just listening as a student and postdoc, just listening. You know, what they're saying about regional trade governance and trade treaties and free trade stuff coming up. This is back in 1994-95.
Now, I remember this.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking to myself...
This is why they wanted to break up the U.S. Yes. And these regional governments to rule
And then
us.
The trade blocks, the three big trade blocks they're talking about. So I was thinking to myself, this is exactly the opposite of what I just learned in school, what I got my degree in. It's opposite. And then I saw a kind of rebuttals written by Ron Paul as I was kind of studying. The internet was just, you know, in its nascent stage at that time. And I'm like, who is this guy? He is saying exactly what I just learned from an economics degree, and all these professors and supposedly wise people are saying the exact opposite of what free trade is and where prosperity comes from. So that's how I got involved from kind of like the economic perspective. Then I got my first job, and I was a programmer. I'm not a programmer anymore. Haven't been for many years, but I got my first job as a programmer, and I started working at departments of transportation and revenue in a couple of the states, programming interfaces. And
now, what year is this that you're
this
doing?
This is 95, okay, 96
this is the
now.
Same time that here in Phoenix, in Arizona, Russell Pierce was Department of Motor Vehicles
right.
head, and it was deadbeat dad legislation.
Yeah, motor voter
national,
law.
A national database. Right. See, a lot of people think,
Social Security
the
number on there.
Yeah, they're saying, you know, yeah, it was for a year, your Social Security number was your driver's license number here in Arizona, and people went into freaking ape crap, man.
Well, it still is.
Yeah, you they just don't they have don't, the same.
They don't expose it
right.
physically, but it's still on your file.
Yeah.
So I was programming interfaces with the federal government, and I was like, what do they need all this data for? I mean, I understand they need pieces of the data, but what do they need all this data for? So I started researching the laws, and it was Clinton back then, motor voter, like you said, in Deadbeat Dads. But what I found out is what they were really doing is Deadbeat Dads was building the kernel or the seed of what's now the Real ID employment automated employment eligibility verification system called E-Verify, right? So they were building the database of who works where and how are we going to control who
gets to
work.
Okay, now I want to inject here so that people understand. Russell Pierce was president of the Senate here and the one that did SB 1070. It was all about the immigration thing. Well, all of us, we're sitting there doing the shows and we're delaying the vote and he's freaking out and calling me domestic terrorist and all this kind of stuff because we knew
but
he wanted...
It was a Clinton-era program, to be clear. He was promoting and pushing the Clinton-era database.
And right after
both
this got
voter
done,
voter and the
E-Verify. That database went straight to Janet Napolitano. It was Heather
and Homeland Security. That's right.
Yep. And she was governor here. All this. Yeah. So the R's and D's, anybody that's paying attention, like Jeff has been, it's all the same people doing the same thing. I rule you.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Memory of the winter of 07 and 08, you know, when we were in New Hampshire during the Ron Paul campaign, the first one, Lovolution. And I always have fond memories of that. It was a record snowstorm. Here, look at the front and back of that.
This I still is, have these.
I know, but that's the
oh,
new one.
Oh, nice.
Stop Wars, that's Home Educate. Awesome. This is a whole new campaign.
And it was in Ireland. I saw a picture of this and painted on the wall
it's
in
all
Ireland.
Over the world.
It's awesome.
Now, what we did out there, I've already done over 200 signs. We're silk screening out here. They're being put up all weekend for this. This is around the country, Philadelphia, New York,
can
Maine,
I have this?
Pittsburgh. Yeah,
it's
I got amazing. You know several. I got you're taking home some signs.
All right,
get over it. You know, and some zip ties.
I'll put them up at the Republican conventions.
Oh,
there we go.
This is see once it starts, and this is one thing. This is where the campaign where I always wanted this to go. I always wanted this whole thing to be about Generation Next. It was always Generation Next. And the only way we're going to stop these wars is if we know why they keep going. You know, home educate. Get them out of the mandatory youth indoctrination of we got to have another war, you know? And I'm just, so this is, you know, I might be talking to you about helping me with that. This is, I'm going. Here we freaking go. They have no idea. They didn't understand what was, the Lovolution was behind that. You were in the middle of this whole thing. You could see what was really going on. And so Jeff and I, a lot of people, this is the first time that you and I really have talked, you know, on the air. We've done a couple of shows before, but about the campaign. It's past time enough that we're kind of, all right, let me tell you what really happened. If we would have been anything to do with the campaign, the Lovolution would never have happened. And I am just, you know, I was so certain of that from the very beginning. I'm like, nah. You do not want me to be in this. That's where I introduced them to you.
And you know, I hate to say it. I have to keep myself from, but it's going to come out. Ernie, you were right. You were right.
There was no doubt in my mind.
You were right.
So I go like this to the campaign. They wanted me, Lou Moore and Kent Snyder came here, and I had a kind of a primer. You know, I did a, you know, because I did my lawsuit, election law, and all that kind of thing. I knew the election law. I go, let me tell you where they're going to screw you. They're going to screw you here. Oh, Ernie, we need you. I go, oh, hell no, I ain't doing it. Because I know, one, you're going to want me to go Republican and, like, advocate voting or something. Hey, neither one of those are going to happen, you know. But we'll go out here and do the Lovolution thing. I know who you need. You need Jeff and Andre, you know. So I go, Jeff and Andre, you know, especially Jeff, take lead on this thing. If you don't have Jeff, you're going to miss a big, giant opportunity. Ah, well, who's Jeff? What about Jeff? Who gives a crap about Jeff? They met with you. I get a phone call from Lou Moore, the campaign manager, after you guys had met, you know, weeks later. Now, you got anybody else? We just can't afford them. And I go, can't afford? You can't afford not to have them. I don't know what the hell you guys are talking about. You're going to get your, oh, well, backhand y'all. And then finally they, you know, met your demands or something, and you start, and you were one of the most effective guys nationally for these people for running a real campaign. But then you started to realize what was going on. Come on, Jeff, share what was going on.
It was good how many people Dr. Paul reached, and I'm glad he did it, and I'm glad he's still going. But, you know, if I think the illustration that I was talking about before the break about how these committees and corporations run, right, and what they're really doing with them will explain it. I mean, I don't know why we have to focus, say, on Dr. Paul or whatever. All the candidates do it, right? They're running corporations and they're making money, and then they pay themselves directorships and their family directorships.
No, I remember when he pulled out, it was the day before he pulled out. It was a Thursday in May in Texas. And the Wednesday before, I remember you calling, you said, you got to call Ron and, you know, try and talk some, you know, let him know what. So I call him. He answers the phone. Ernie, what's up? And I go, I know you're going to go on a conference call with all your state coordinating, whatever the guys, and kind of tell them what's up. And I go, I just want, you know, loyal opposition here, man. I mean, you know, if you do this, you're not going to have the same kind of backing in the future that you would if you just kept your word and go through the convention.
And I had the same conversation with him, and I'll tell you exactly what he told me. So I was always very respectful, right?
As was I.
Yep. But I asked several times the same thing. I said, you have very loyal people who have slogged their way all the way through all of the convention,
I mean,
and everything.
Given up their entire life, yep, for a year and a half.
The money, the effort, going into conventions. They're literally going into the conventions to win, no less. They were going to win. And all they needed, he didn't have to even say he was in it or not in it.
Just
not say anything. Right, just say nothing and everything would be fine. He yelled at me.
He did.
He said, I love the man. I truly do. And you know, but he thought it was best. And he said to me that that he was told by his consultants that they'd be more successful launching Campaign for Liberty sooner. And so,
when he yelled, was it a specific point or an issue that he?
Well,
really,
I mean, he didn't.
Shut up!
It was because I, again, very respectfully, but I repeated myself a third time. He told me after the second time, and the third time, he said, that's enough. You know, I'm not doing it.
I'm wondering how much
I kind of got the same pushback.
I'm wondering how much was, I wasn't there with it, but how much was it he was frustrated with you asking a third time on top of the fact that you were on top of Ernie and everyone else saying the same thing?
Sure,
it was probably a combination.
It could be that.
I'm curious that pressure.
Oh, no.
I don't think worse of him is.
Let me give you behind the scenes some of the stuff that happened. In April, third week in April of 08, when they brought me and Michael and Lyman and all these guys to Washington, and they're going to go explain it to us, they wanted us on their side. They didn't say they were going to pull. They didn't say that. They were talking about it and what can we do. And Michael and Trevor, they're just, oh, we'll run as an independent, run as a libertarian, run it. Well, they didn't understand the law. I mean, it was already too late to do a lot of that stuff. And I'm going, you know, unless he went LP, it just wasn't good. He just had to stay in. He just keep his promise. Yeah. I mean, because he looked at people that had spent hundreds of thousands of dollars outside his campaign and looked at him. As long as you guys keep supporting me, I'll keep going. And then they did and he didn't. I go, it's no more complicated than that. So don't think you're going to get the same kind of thing going in the 12. And sure as heck, your son.
But even though in 12, the same thing. We had six delegations, I think maybe possibly even seven, on the floor, filed the right papers, where the majority of the delegates from six delegations, six. But he had issued the statement just weeks prior that he was suspending his campaign.
And then and his son endorsed Romney. This whole thing. So I'm going, what the heck are you guys thinking?
All they had to say was nothing. That's it. They didn't have to go one way or the other.
I found out what the deal was, and you can confirm this if the way it goes. It was, they had, up to that time, it was a money thing. They thought that they were kind of peaked, and they had $6 million in the bank. If they suspend the campaign, it got to go to this PAC, and they could start whatever they wanted with it, and they thought
I don't know the numbers, but I think less money came in after than before. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know the
numbers.
Then
they had the Restore the Republic Convention in Minneapolis-St. Paul. You were there when they started Campaign for Liberty. This is where I want to get to. I want to talk about the beginnings of it.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful.
Yeah, my gosh, it's down in the 60s or something. Let it snow, let it snow. I don't know, how hot is it out there? Was it pretty cold or what?
It's actually quite warm. Warmer than last year.
I know, it sucks to be you.
The heater on my motorcycle didn't work too well this morning. So.
I know, and he doesn't wear any ear covering. Now, what the heck is up with that? You like this red nose ear tip thing going on or something?
It's Phoenix. We're not in Oslo.
I don't know, man. Any breeze and it's
good
cold
for
my
your,
ears.
It's good for your immune system.
That means you're getting old.
Damn Skippy. You know, I'm just, no, hell no. I'm Arizona. Well, Donna's from Pennsylvania, where you guys spend a lot of time. Yeah. And she's like, no more snow. We're done. We went up to Prescott last night. There was like kind of a snow dusting on the mountains, you know, kind of on the north side of the cutout for the highway kind of deal. You know, and I go, look, snow. It's a semi-white Christmas. All right. Now, the one thing that we want to get back into the Campaign for Liberty, you got to be careful and be respectful. And, you know, we're all very appreciative of Dr. Paul. But you got to keep in mind, he's a politician, or was, you know. I think he's getting freed up a lot more. Because when you do have private conversations with him, he's, you know, he's leaving the dance with who brung him. You know, that was, you start being, you go, hey, man, I've talked to him. He's, you know, I bet you of the three times he spoke at the Freedom Summit, of the entire campaign, our paths crossing as much as it did, having him on the show a couple of times, I'll bet we spent no more than less than an hour in conversation over the decade or more that I've known him. So don't think that he and I, you know, that's why I like to support him and his process, because I don't have to babysit. I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to. The words out of his mouth, the vote that he's done, that is, you know, the rest is politics. I mean, he told me that. Mm-hmm. He goes, you can count on the words out of my mouth, my vote, the rest is politics. And I'm going, okay. So I saw it that way. Now, the thing is the Campaign for Liberty, I want to get this out of the way. When we went to Minneapolis-St. Paul, I remember in the hotel room, now this is after, right after Adam Kokesh had given his big revolution speech, and we had the big revolution march in Washington, D.C., Gary Franchi and I emceed that. It was an all-day thing. It built up to Ron speaking. Well, that was a hoot, man. It was hot, but I mean, it was rock and roll and whatnot. After that, now I'm going around calling Kokesh Congressman Kokesh because I knew they were going to tap him or he was going to want to be tapped or whatever. I go, you don't have a good speech like that, a young guy and a Marine and everything go to waste. They're going to, you know, do whatever. So when the Minneapolis St. Paul Restore the Republic big convention, the RNC had their convention and mirrored it, you know, across the, you know, town, they had, you know, let them have their freaking tank armed, you know, hut neo-Nazi, you know, stormtroopers out front guys. Didn't care. Nobody went, I didn't care. But over at the Target, you know, whatever the heck it was, big giant stadium there was probably 60, 70,000 people there. I mean, it was filled. It was filled.
And we're talking about the alternate Ron Paul convention. Paul held his own convention, same town, same day, cross town, and we had more people than the Republican convention.
This was huge. Now, at the time, you know, the campaign, when it released, I saw Lou Moore there. Say, hey, Lou, what's up? He had went to work for the Republican, for McCain. By that time, he was already on the McCain, but which meant database, probably. You know, something. There's always, it's database. Everything's database.
It was a senatorial something committee. And
blah, blah, blah. So I'm just like, you know, yeah, well, you know, everybody's, you know, scrambling for where they're going to land. Well, we go to that, and Kokesh was there, and I put Kokesh and Jeff in the hotel room, and I go, you guys work it out, peace, and I left because I don't care. Because the next day, they were going to be announcing to all the rank and file that they had this Campaign for Liberty thing, and all you guys have been doing what you want, and all this, and money you did, and raised, and kind of kicking ass, and everything on your own, and your own money, and everything. Well, now we don't want you to do that anymore. You need to give us $35, and here's the bylaws, and you do what the hell we tell you. And I go, that ain't going to work. And I told him in April, I go, look, I'm telling you, you don't understand these people. This is not how they roll. So I go, whatever, you're going to find out. So they go into it, and it went into revolt. I wasn't in there. Tell me what happened.
Well, I didn't see it exactly like you saw it, right? I really believe that it was an opportunity to keep the revolution moving forward. But there's just something about corporate structures, putting corporate structures around popular movements that has a cooling effect. And there were a lot of, I don't know, some of those guys who you say were an open revolt. I mean, I don't know what they really all do anyway, except blog and complain, you know. Not all of them. There's a lot of good people too, but a lot of them are just really kind of complainers. So, but the point is one way or the other, whether I'm right or wrong, it that kind of corporate mentality, that corporate structure just had a cooling effect.
It didn't do what I was hoping it would do.
It didn't do what I really believed it could have happened. You know, I don't know what to say. I know your opinion on it, right?
Yeah, my thing is exactly what was going on. I tell you what, the only thing that I told the campaign is I go, and you were part of this in the, you know, early day when we were doing this, as I go, I only need you to do two things. Okay, I don't need anything. Two things. One, when I go to a town and I go into the state coordinator of the office, if they got a bunch of signs, if we want to do that, if we want to help, if we want, you know, I go in, they just give us a sign, we'll go put them up. You know, and amongst all the other crap that we're doing, I go, they just say, here's the signs, and they just shut up. Because they would always go like this. They go, well, you can't put these up, and your signs can't go up, and it has to be, and you can't. And we got this memo from the city of saying what we can. I go, yeah, if I see anybody putting up signs, I'll shoot them for you. I mean, you know, I'm going, seriously? I go, just tell them just to shut up, just leave us alone, and we'll go do our thing. That's all I want. Thing two, when we have all these young kids, I mean, there would be kids, I mean, literally teenagers in early 20s, that we'd spend days making hundreds of signs. I thought, who has a driveway? I mean, we just do it. Hundreds of signs, put them up. When you have your event, that usually I get there like a Wednesday, it'd be Saturday. All I want is these dozen kids, two dozen kids that spent all this time, and they're not from their keyboard, they're out doing stuff. They don't have to stand in line with 2,000 people to shake his hand. Yeah, we're behind the scenes. You just come back, let them take their pictures, do your 3.2 minutes of, you know, peace out and great and wonderful, and they get, and then you go to the crowd. That's all I want. And that's all they did. Nothing else. I didn't want anything from him other than him just to show appreciation to people that did all those signs. And if we needed anything from the, you know, go put up signs, they just shut up and left us alone.
but they just couldn't. Well, Ernie, come in the office. This happened over and over. Come in. I just want you to see this note from the city of, like, I care. You know, I'm going, you know, whatever. So I could see that anybody else, you know, like someone that wasn't as experienced or as aged, you know, as I was in my, I don't know, what, 40s or whatever. And I go, if it was some young guy, you know, they'd feel like the official blanket, the cooling effect that you're talking about. I mean, I got that from you. You go, who are the coolers? You go, well, that guy's a cooler. Intentional or unintentional, it's like a position. Mm-hmm. People come in and they just could. It's always, you go to a meetup of 100 people. So one person say, well, if you don't have a permit to put those signs up, won't you get the death penalty or something? I mean, you know, cooler. And I'm going, nope. Not doing. People were, we had to take, we had to ban Property 6. There's a band that was big Ron Paul supporters. I asked them to go up with us. They were doing a gig in Vegas. They went to the sign-making party, and each one of the band members went with a group to put up the signs because they were going out and coming back. We couldn't find a place to put them up. They were scared. I go, are you kidding me? Just go with them. And they got the rainbow mohawk. And woohoo! We're putting up signs. Once it started, it went crazy. L.A.? Same time. Remember, you got to go to Southern California.
It's unbelievable.
They got all this chain link. Yeah. Their entire freeway system is a freaking parking lot. Yeah. With all this chain link, I go, what are you guys, stupid? So we go to the Jay Leno thing, and I'm passing out stencils. We didn't even give them the
Didn't
sign.
Everybody have a shirt that night on Jay Leno? Everybody had the shirt on. It was unbelievable.
No, we had to take them off.
Oh, is that right?
They go like, oh, too many yellow shirts.
But the amount of media you're able to generate is unbelievable.
Okay, now that was my perspective on this, and you get kind of the inside stuff. Jeff can give it from the campaign side, because inside the conventions and the people that were actually playing the politics and going to the convention, becoming delegates, going to the precinct committee, going to all the 15 gazillion meetings at the local, the county, the state, he'll tell you what happened.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened. It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
And we're back. That same song, I liked it. You know, this one reminded me of the winter of 07-08. And it was record snowfall. And that was when, you know, Sarver, remember the kid from ASU? He went out with him and he goes, I claim the snow mountain in the name of the Ron Paul, whatever, you know. And then made it into a documentary and we had a lot of fun. There was so much inspiration. I could see what was happening to an entire generation. Now, I saw it on the outside, you know, totally different. Now, Jeff and I, we talked a lot. We knew what was going on, and I, you know, Lou Moore, the campaign manager, we got along fine. We didn't coordinate really anything. The only, because that would have been illegal, like I cared, you know, but my whole thing is that I didn't coordinate. All I wanted from him was, I go, we're going to be here. We're going to be doing this. Keep these guys away from me. and we just wanted to be able to get pictures. That was it. So from the inside, you know, it's totally different for Jeff. You're in the delegate thing, man. You're in the conventions. You're doing Robert's Rules of Can I Finish and Point of Order crap, you know? So, you know, give us some flavor on the inside.
So first I want to say that it took a minute for Ernie to hammer into my brain, because I have kind of a thick skull too. It took a minute for him to hammer it in exactly what it
just
was doing.
A minute.
But but I got it. And I have to tell you, it's brilliant if you understand it. And it can't be coordinated, right? But
impossible. But
if you, once you get the concept of allowing people to do what they want to do, right, it falls into place how it can work, right? And so I finally got it, and it's just brilliant.
But
anyway,
be a resource. Instead of directing them to do something they don't want to do, when they're volunteers, you let them do whatever they want to do, and you help them. And that is not a campaign. They don't do that.
So from you want to talk to the inside. So let me give you just 30 nutshell background is I came up through precinct committee. I think at the time it was Utah in the 90s, late 90s. And I was a precinct committee man. Then I was on the county committee. I was on the state committee. Then I was on the state central committee before I came to Arizona. And so that, their convention process is a lot more contentious than ours. And it's fun. I think it's fun. The contention is fun in the convention. And so I love seeing that. It's kind of the marketplace of ideas and brokering and blah, blah, blah.
Just
and
a
delegates.
Convention
gorilla. And I love party politics. I hate electoral politics, but I love party politics. Anyway, I was hoping to take that experience and replicate it 100,000 times. That was my personal goal, is to get people educated on the process of how to do the party politics. I was hoping one day to take it over, right? Replicate those people and get them successful and get them to understand how it works 100,000 times all the way around the country. So that's why I really loved working on the campaign, because it was an opportunity to train people on just basic, how to win friends and influence people, how to build personal relationships, how to not get to know your neighbors, right? Knock on doors, how to do vote harvesting through canvassing and signatures and, sales. You get, 100 cold calls, you get 3% back. It's a sale, all the same stuff, but train people how to do that sales concept in politics, bring in that 3%, because it's the 3% that moves the needle on who wins in an election or a convention, whatever you want. And so I wanted to get the people trained on that, and that's why I really, I think I was contributed to my success, because it was a genuine effort. It was a selfless effort on my behalf, right? Because I just wanted to get people successful, learn how to do this, and it's some just basic skills that aren't even political, right? They're just life skills, and then translate them to politics, and then I'm also an engineer, so it's a system, so then train people on the system of how it works, and then channel that into the system and get the result you want, right? Input output. So we were very successful in the Southwest doing that in conventions in Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, California, filing the delegates, Arizona, New Mexico. I mean, we were really successful in all that. So Ernie, I mean, what is it that you want from the inside? Here's what I would say is the reason I was so disappointed when Dr. Paul made the announcement that he was suspending the campaign, it was late April, early May, whenever it was, is as much as I wanted to see him win, I wanted to see these 100,000 people in the Southwest win. I wanted them to experience going all the way
to the freaking convention.
Through
that was the promise.
Right.
Convention, through, going to the convention.
Through not even the national, but through their convention. State convention cycle all the way to the end.
He stopped it
in the middle.
Night.
Before
the beginning of Texas convention,
right? And so,
are you kidding?
There was
me?
A dozen conventions throughout the West where, when our delegates then went, all the leadership and all the RNC lawyers and leadership of the state party, they all knew that Ron was done, and so they could abuse the crap out of our delegates, and there was nothing our delegates could do because there's no one supporting them, because there's no campaign, essentially, so why even give them any respect or 2 seconds on the mic?
They took the campaign money, rolled it into whatever the heck they,
Campaign for Liberty.
And thought that was going to be the launch of, I don't know, make money, something. I think
from my discussion with Dr. Paul, he had a sincere belief that, for better or worse, that was the right thing to do. I personally disagreed, which is why I think he told me to let it go.
What he told me. He said, Ernie, if we're not going to be able to win, it's been clear to me that they're going to make sure that it just makes us look crazy. He goes,
but
foolish.
But it wasn't about, that's where I had the beef. It wasn't about them. And I know, with respect to the activists like you, it wasn't about, for me, it wasn't about those activists at that point. At that point in April, it wasn't about those activists. It was about the people who had spent their time and their money going all the way through the process, getting all the abuse from the party.
Well,
they were being successful. But here's the thing. They were successful. We were taking conventions. It was working. Well,
you guys were activists in your own way.
It was working.
It overlapped. There was a whole bunch of people here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Huge overlap. But my primary concern, having been in the campaign, was for those people going through that particular process.
Most of the real activists were precinct committeemen for Ron Paul and making signs.
Right.
And, you know, so there was a whole lot of overlap.
Well, I'm saying that Jeff wasn't seeing the activists from the outside. You were seeing the activism
from within.
That's another form of activism, is taking it to the convention as well.
It's a different form. That's right.
Jeff will tell you, I never discouraged him from going inside the party.
No, you didn't. I'm like, go. You need to go because you need to know
how jacked up this thing is.
And for, if nothing else to learn. Right? Yeah. If nothing else.
I knew they would. I went through it.
The learning process.
Because I was a young guy and I go, oh, it's different this time. We're going to, it's different because it's different. And I'm going, yeah, it ain't different. Okay. So you guys are going to need to go find out how different it ain't. All right. Ain't.
But I saw it at that point as an opportunity for them to get jazzed up to the next, you know, when an electron jumps to the next level in the cell from higher energy being added, right? Mm-hmm. Becomes an ion. There is an opportunity to jazz up 100,000 people in the West to that next level of energy permanently for their lives, like I had been 10 years prior, right? And cutting their legs out from under them, that's why I was personally disappointed. Cutting their legs out from under them practically the night before they were at the point of jumping to that next level of energy.
This is the one question.
Is where I was disappointed.
And 12, before we hit the end here, and then we got to get in the Trump report. And then we'll go long. We'll go until we're done. The one thing that I really wanted to get from you is that there was a big wave of new people that came in 12. They go, oh, we missed the 08 part. We want to be, you know, we're here now. And we're going, yeah, well, that's, you missed that one. That's a different thing this
time.
A lot
were genuine, though. They were all just a lot of kids, a lot of new people.
It was really genuine. They went in, but they were looking for a redo of what happened. It just wasn't quite that way.
But they were still successful. Don't get that wrong.
Matt Papke and John Laurie, these guys, they go to Tampa. They go, yeah, Ernie, and it's going to be different this time. They can't screw us on international TV. And I go, yeah, that's when they do it, man. Just to let you know.
But the campaign was successful, too. So you need to give props are due. The campaign was successful. The activists were successful. It did not have the same grassroots feeling. I agree. But the success was still there, but then the same thing happened again.
Late April, early May. It's Romney and Paul.
But this time,
and his son endorses Romney.
We had the requisite six delegations with the majority of delegates on the floor. Sorry, I'm banging on the thing. Mm-hmm. On the floor of the national convention, they could have actually gotten his name entered, but there was no campaign. It was suspended, so they just ignored. There's even video.
Why
I got to get you the videos of that. The guy who actually gave the report in the convention floor to enter his name has been on your radio show before. I'll show you the video.
Yeah, and eyes have it.
Yeah, but John Boehner.
But they made a nice video of Ron Paul to show. Remember that? Video with the trees.
All they had to say was nothing. That's all I had to say. Let the activists do their thing and just sit back and do nothing.
Well, I'm wondering what the benefit has been. You know, I get the impression that Ron... See, I haven't had him on the show.
It must have been for Rand.
Until after it was all done that I had Ron on. I didn't even have him on the show. Until he's doing Ron Paul Institute for Peace, Prosperity, kind of just him.
It's smaller, though.
So what? He's just separate from them. He gets to say whatever he wants. That's the only time you get any kind of real Ron Paul, and I'm free of them, and I have given my only begotten... Well, maybe not his only... But I give you my son, you know, sacrifice him on the cross of Pod. Go over there and you can deal with him.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
From Keene in the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world, this is Daryl W. Perry, host of FPP Radio News for Tuesday, December 22nd, 2015. Silver is trading at $14.34 per ounce. Gold is valued at $1,080 per ounce. And according to BitcoinAverage.com, the average price of Bitcoin is $440. Antiwar.com reports coalition airstrikes against the major the Islamic State held Iraqi city of Mosul leveled homes in a residential neighborhood on Monday, killing at least 20 people, including at least 12 civilians. The claim was that the homes were used by the Islamic State. Witnesses said one of the houses belonged to the son of a local the Islamic State commander. Several other houses in the area were badly damaged by the attacks, and officials have conspicuously not commented on the incident so far. U.S. officials have generally not admitted to large civilian death tolls during airstrikes against the Islamic State territory, insisting the reports of eyewitnesses in those areas are not credible and refusing to investigate the claims more thoroughly. Mosul is the largest city of the Islamic State and has been held by the Islamic State since the summer of 2014. Though U.S. and Iraqi officials have talked up the eventual counterattack, there is no timetable for trying to reclaim the city, which is still deeply entrenched in the Islamic State's territory. The Daily Decrypt is a Monday through Friday newscast about all the best news in cryptocurrencies and peer-to-peer networks. Know what's hot in the world of digital money, borderless trade, and cutting-edge communications. Available on YouTube, SoundCloud, and Facebook Video. The Daily Decrypt is the news of the future. UPI reports the U.S. Food and Drug Administration on Monday overturned a rule banning gay men from donating blood, but will still impose some restrictions. The FDA's lifetime ban on blood donations from gay and bisexual men that's been in effect for 32 years has been lifted, but a new policy will ban men from donating blood if they've had sex with another man in the previous year. The lifetime ban was put in place amid the AIDS crisis. The FDA said in a statement the decision was made to reflect the most current scientific evidence and to help ensure continued safety of the blood supply by reducing the risk of human immunodeficiency virus transmitted by blood and blood products. The FDA said it will continue to reevaluate blood donor deferral policies whenever new scientific information becomes available. Critics of the new policy have said that gay men are still effectively banned from donating blood because they must be abstaining from sex, but the agency said it does not have research to loosen the regulation any further than the 12-month ban. Among other groups subject to the same 12-month ban in order to reduce the risk of HIV and AIDS transmission includes heterosexuals who have used intravenous drugs or had sex with prostitutes in the previous 12 months. For nearly 40 years, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has been a trusted source for buying and selling precious metals like gold and silver. They also take Bitcoin for precious metal purchases and have permanently removed the minimum purchase amount for all orders paid in the digital currency. Call Roberts & Roberts today for knowledgeable advice on buying and selling precious metals and a forward-thinking approach to new technologies. 800-874-9760 or visit online at rrbi.co. Reuters reports a Baltimore police officer will face retrial on manslaughter charges over the death of Freddie Gray starting on June 13th, according to a Maryland judge on Monday after the officer's first trial ended in a deadlocked jury. The Maryland State Court's office said in a statement that Judge Barry Williams set the trial date after meeting prosecutors and defense lawyers. Gray's death in April caused protest in the city and intensified U.S. debate on police treatment of minorities. The date for the retrial of Officer William Porter in Baltimore City Circuit Court could snarl prosecutor strategy to use him as a key witness against other officers in the high-profile trial. Porter was the first of six officers to be tried in connection with Gray's death from a broken neck sustained while in police custody. A jury was unable to reach a decision last week, and Williams declared a mistrial. Porter faces charges of involuntary manslaughter, second-degree assault, reckless endangerment, and misconduct in office. The trial of the van driver, Officer Caesar Goodson, who faces the most serious charge of second-degree depraved heart murder, is set to begin on January 6th. Prosecutors had hoped to convict Porter and use him as a witness against Goodson and Sergeant Alicia White. Porter testified he passed Gray's request for medical help to them, but none was summoned. This has been FPP Radio News, online at fppradio.com.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Not a fear. Here in Claire, your independent mayor and attack actor in Phoenix, Arizona. From the BEAUD Bull Studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. I got Jeff Greenspan and Frank, you're disappointed. I feel better. This is going to be a good conversation this hour, the Trump Reporter kind of thing. They have different opinion, you know, and Frank cannot have his opinion challenged without the throwdown. So this is like, let me give Jeff's opinion, and I'll give Frank's opinion. Then they can tell me what it really is, okay?
I don't do Trump yet.
Well, hell. I'm sorry, Frank. Let's not do Trump then. All right, what do you want to do?
So, well, because I was real quiet last hour, and I was letting you guys go at it. I wanted to ask you some questions. That's the whole reason
Ask a question? Ask someone from Pennsylvania? NASA. Southeastern?
Yeah.
No, ask NASA. A question? Sorry, go ahead.
It's all right. We've got a dominance here. You're from U of P. I'm from Penn State. My dad's here, Philly. I'm from Philly. So, of course, we're from the uncivilized part of Pennsylvania. You know, of course, you're in U of P. So I have some questions I want to ask you because... you know, and granted, maybe it's some things you can't talk about. I wasn't aware of somebody coming in. But, you know, I'm wondering, what was the Campaign for Liberties, if you happen to know from your perspective, their view of Freedoms Phoenix? Is that something that was even talked about? If not just Freedoms Phoenix, but
hell
the
no.
activist community. What was their perspective? Or were we just kind of an area that was untapped resource that they wish they could communicate better? Were we just a bunch of rugrats that were just like flies on the wall, like mosquitoes? Like, how did they see us? Because I'm trying to get to find out how... what Campaign for Liberty could have done better to deal with the activist community, and it also what could groups like Freedoms Phoenix have done better to communicate better with groups like
okay,
that?
So that's from here.
This is not a group.
All right, it's not a group.
But okay, you may say the revolution, but Freedoms Phoenix kept its separate.
Activist groups, right. However, would so
this is a spirit.
It's a loaded issue. This is where I want to have a discussion.
Yeah, but it sounds like the spirit is of continuous improvement, right? How can we all continuously improve? So I think it's a genuine question, right? How did campaign? Well, I can't obviously speak on behalf of everybody, but if I were to give you a couple of perceptions that I picked up, one is I think the overriding one is they just didn't understand it, right? They just simply didn't understand it. You know, why can't these people just organize and do things our way? Da, 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 da. Now I have to understand what Campaign for Liberty teaches. They teach some extremely effective mm-hmm. organizational techniques, and I highly suggest whether you want to be inside of Campaign for Liberty or outside of Campaign for Liberty, you should take the training. It's phenomenal training, and the stuff they teach works. It works. So now, if you want to be, well, let me finish. So you want to be outside of Campaign for Liberty, so be it. You could do the Freedoms Phoenix style activism, but learn that methodology because it can be leveraged it could be leveraged in a million ways. It could be leveraged formally, it could be leveraged informally, it could be leveraged as an individual activist. It doesn't matter. The training is phenomenal. Now that said, I think they just simply didn't understand the activists. I think
What was the training?
I don't want to get into it all because we could spend an hour, but they have formal and kind of local trainings and national trainings. But it's just building on life skills, building on sales techniques and how you persuade
and also,
people,
was it
how you organize
electoral
people.
Politics.
No. Not,
what was it?
No. It's influence building, if you will. It's how to expand your sphere of influence, I would say. Now, there is formal political training, too. It's also good, just if nothing else, to learn how it works and what's being used against you, right, by politics. So I don't want to understate that the training is outstanding.
I want to echo that.
Put on more songs.
I want to echo it because I did go to a couple of the trainings, and it was fantastic. I mean, the depth. I think they should be teaching this in schools.
Yeah,
I mean, and not just the building which he's talking about, but for instance, I'm just giving one example. How to go through all of your representatives, and there's this whole like structure of like this grid where you give points to each person about how to find your champions and which champion is over here and the right strategy. Many times finding a representative who you think is in your camp on a specific issue, spending time with that person may not be the most advantageous way to get a movement. There's this whole little calculation grid. I was quite impressed about the logic of how to allocate your resources.
It
was very, very good. That's just the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
But I highly recommend anyone out there interested in some of the getting involved through the system, which I'm part of as well. This is kind of where I think the three of us make like Kirk, Spock, and Bones. I think, you know, I'm not trying to play the Kirk role necessarily, but because I know I want to be Kirk. But the thing is, what I mean is, was like Ernie, I look at Ernie as being more, let's just forget the whole system and do the activism and let the culture change. Whereas you, at least from before, it sounds like you've kind of gone through an evolution with this too, but your perspective was the antithesis, which was more, you know what, you could do all the signs and activism you want, but unless you actually make it, you know, actually make a change in the system, then all the liberals and all the activists in government are going to make the decisions for you, like the 3% we're talking about, right? So my view, I think, has been more of an in between. I've been kind of a question mark for many people. Court is sort of, you know, I'm an activist, but yet I get involved in the system and giving him a hard time sometimes.
So can I speak?
I'm in both camps, and I think you've kind of evolved that point
where,
too.
Where I evolved is, I have an engineer's brain, engineers by training, engineer background. So I was thinking system, not like a libertarian activist thinks, oh my God, the system. I'm just thinking there's step one, step two, mm-hmm. inputs, outputs, here's how it works, here's how da-da-da-da-da. It's like a flow diagram, right? That's all I was thinking when I'm talking system. But where I evolved is it's personal relationships, right? So that's why I know Ernie's not wrong, because he's reaching people at a personal level. That's also how I know I'm not wrong, because you can leverage simple how to win friends and influence people type of things to build personal relationships, expand your sphere of influence to get the outcome you want. So it's not that you need to oppose a system because it's a system. I mean, there's systems, computer systems, right? So computers, if you oppose, how do you oppose a computer system? It's just the way things work, right? So you still need to know how things work. But my point is, where my evolution is going less of the flow diagram, even though that's still just as important, more increasing, I'd say, on the personal, building personal relationships and expanding your personal sphere of influence. That's where I've grown.
So one of the things I've learned through it is you need both. You can have all the fire of Prometheus and the energy, which is what Ernie is good at stoking.
Yeah.
But then when you get all that energy, you need to direct it somewhere. Otherwise, they get all riled
but
up. And
not,
you don't know where
no,
to go.
You not
want
through,
that energy directed where people want it directed.
No.
And it not necessarily where the people
not,
have the energy
not
to
in
want
a,
to go.
Not in an authoritarian structure, but at least giving them the tools to do something with it, right?
Well,
so you have to deliver tools that they have to be
able
to participate
in. You're so excited and this is what we want you to do with
no,
that
no,
excitement
no.
and directing
I'm not like
what
that.
We want.
I'm not saying that.
I'm not saying that either. What I feel, and maybe this is my, just to complete that thought with this, is that I guess I've learned enough through this that you have to engage and nurture both, because matter of fact, they asked Lou Rockwell and Ron Paul at the Mises thing that we went to, and they asked, I think it was what's her name? She was here at your Christmas party. With the red hair,
Renee.
No, not Renee. She did the
second. Oh, Dara.
She asked the question, which I was going to ask in the back as well, which is to Dr. Paul. The evil elected official. Is that you have this whole room full of people that are probably the most educated in politics of any group, and yet most of them just don't even bother voting. So what do you do with this power and this knowledge? And I think, and what he said is, I think where I've evolved myself, if you call it evolution, which is that you need both. I really believe that you need the 4409s out there, the people that are going to put the signs up and challenge authority with video cameras and the culture. And then at the same time, you need other groups of people like the Daras and maybe myself and yourself to a degree, which is to take that and then focus it into an area to make the change from the inside out.
Yeah,
after all, Dr. Paul was an elected official. If he didn't run, none of us would be here right now.
I have an opinion! When we come
back.
Oh,
you have an opinion?
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
I know, same with me.
I had no idea. You know what they're saying? Da, 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 the kids in the background, the chorus.
War is over.
That's
if
it.
You want it.
War is over if you want it. I had no idea. And they didn't want it to be very understood or they wouldn't play. I know. So that was a whole campaign of Christmas. Merry, Merry Christmas. War is over if you want it. Happy Christmas from... Yeah, what was it say? I got it right on the bottom here. It says, Happy Christmas from John and Yoko. That was a campaign that went international in all English-speaking countries. New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, Great Britain, America, Canada. There are billboards everywhere. And it was just...
Yeah, but how are you supposed to make money?
Now, God.
How are you supposed to make money?
I think John Lennon may have enough. He's good. You know?
Yeah, John was all right.
But what about the contractors? How are they supposed to make money?
Oh, see? He's bringing it right back. Okay, this is my opinion. Everything that... And I think Jeff and I probably are more on the same page because we've been working together a lot. Even though he's in... I mean, he's... In. Okay, he was in, you know, managing the convention.
Right.
Okay.
Did a good job at it, I have to say.
They did a great job.
Yeah.
And kind of pissed off a lot of people, he did a great job. So this is the whole point. For me, none of that electoral stuff happens unless you have public opinion and support of whatever it is. Politics, votes, is a side effect of a general, just simple preference, public opinion. If you don't have that, you don't get these kids and people out doing all this stuff unless they wanted to. Or you make them want to by either lying to them, deceiving them, cheating them, paying them, which a lot of these guys
are just
paying.
The Office of Strategic Information Awareness? Strategic information.
Exactly. You know, it's just somebody's doing it. It's managed. When you have people in a philosophy and an opportunity for people to manage their own time, to demonstrate their preferences, all this stuff overwhelms any attempt to control it. Any attempt to control it diminishes it. So I always deal in movements. And I'll tell you right now, the next movement, it's the extraction of Generation Next from the bosom of freaking Count Dracula, the public government education school system. That is such a no-brainer to me. Stop wars, home educate. I'm just using that as, that's the beginning. This ain't over. I'm just getting started. This is just the beginning. This is just, you know, the salvo. This is just, you know, here we go. And I'll be talking to Jeff about you, and they're just going to continue. I'm willing to spark this because it has the same thing behind it as the Levolution did. To think it's going to be political is to not understand how it really works. I'll go down to the legislature. I'll say, yo, what's up to some of the guys. I've done this, you know, many times. Jeff knows this. And I'll go, look, is freedom a trait in Arizona? You know, is yeah, he's got robots, clones, and artificial intelligence. You know, this is, you know, this, we are, when they say the greatest existential threat to humanity is artificial intelligence, I have to look up existential. What the hell does existential mean? That's a big word, man. That's a $100 word. Extinction. I mean, you know, that's going to be, you know, humanity as we know it. You know, you're going to get chipped and you're kind of matrixed in and kind of your, you know, stuff could happen. And the only thing that's going to save Generation Next from, you know, the evil that can be done with the technology is the desire to do good with it. Just a desire. If they could squash the desire with the right water, food, air, whatever, they have to change us as human beings. That is what I'm fighting for. Generation. I got 10 grandchildren. And I'm going, what world are they going to have? And it is not going to get fixed from some electoral campaign candidate of whatever. No, that's the manifestation of the opinion. It was time for Ron Paul. He had been there for decades. Jeff had been influenced by him. I had been influenced by him. You had been influenced by him. But it wasn't until the people needed, wanted, desired, and saw the benefit of this philosophy that he rose. Why didn't he before? It's because it wasn't time. The time is coming again. It always does. And it's like 3 or 4 presidential election cycles, and then we go again. It was, you know, freaking Goldwater, then it was Reagan, then it was Perot, then it was Ron Paul, and now it'll be Lord knows who else. And it wasn't anything, you know, like Perot's just a pop. Hell, was, anybody paid attention then, you see the parallels with Trump. A billionaire, can I finish? And I'm telling you, it will come again. Can you make it come? Not really. It's like the fourth turning thing. You just serve it. You just ride it. I've been screaming about the wave that was coming for almost, God, 17 years before the Levolution. And I go, here it is. How did you know? How did you not know? Because you weren't paying attention to the right thing. It's always looking at percentage and dollars and, you know, that's not where you look. You look in the heart of the Generation Next of what they just want. So what do? We're coming back from Prescott last night. My son-in-law is talking to his Garmin. Hey, Garmin, his map thing. I need to get another shirt. You know, I got the wrong shirt when he went up. I didn't put it on because I didn't want to get all wrinkled. And it was back when I was thinner. So I go, we got to stop at Kohl's here real quick. He goes, hey, we need a Kohl's in Prescott and kind of boom. And it did it. And I go, that thing's on. It hears you talking all the time, like on your Android phone. Okay, Google. Oh, hey, Siri. I mean, it goes on. And if it knows what I'm talking to it, what's it doing? It's always listening to you. He goes, I was in my car. We had a phone. He didn't know it was a Garmin phone, whatever. They were talking about some donut place that they went by the next day. It started hitting that donut place here, hitting their Facebook feed. And I'm going, holy crap. He goes, you know, I wasn't even surprised. They have to change that, tap into us. And if they want to ride the market of this, it's just public opinion. So that's why I deal in public opinion way more than any of this other crap. All this other stuff is a demonstration of the side effect. What say you, Jeff?
I really admire your your optimism, and I attempt to
channel it when it's convenient.
be more optimistic. I think I'm just not as optimistic as you about the future, pretty much.
Yeah, but I mean, what? How else would you change it?
Well,
you got three kids.
No, you're right. So it's changing the minds of individuals, right? That's the only way to do it. I mean, if you they've got such a lockdown of strategic information, right, on public opinion and TV and the airwaves. It's just it's
which is why we support like Made Safe, decentralized, no server based. That's one thing. They have Khan Academy and even Ron Paul curriculum, but it's server based. Sign up here. We see your kid taking tests how fast they learn on the grid.
Thing
and
is
I
that,
go, I need to where I have an encrypted file like Airbits, you know, Bitcoin wallet, to where they don't even know who only I know. I don't want them to know. So here's your extra money for you to not know.
The biggest enemy is we need, or they need. You have to do it yourself. There's no savior coming. He already came.
Yeah, well, he might be.
We're about
again.
To celebrate his birthday.
He's going
to
find out.
Yeah, when he comes back again, people are in big trouble.
Yeah, well, I heard he was at least busy. You know, Jeff busy. Frank busy.
You know, we're all busy. We'll get busy when we come back here. And that Frank talk.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. You know, I'm, you know, let's go ahead. There's a pattern, you know, and you, if we talk about it, you know, we go through this and you look, you've been around long enough, you know, people older than me, you start to see that, you know, even the Goldwater, you know, his connections. If you ever read the Arizona Project, you'll see here in Arizona that was done with a reporter got blown up, Don Bowles. They have at the museum in Washington, D.C., his blown up car. In the wing. It's all that. And you read that book.
What they're saying is this can happen to you, too.
You damn Skippy. They want to make sure you know. Look at this car. Yeah, don't think yours has got a, you know, bomb-proof.
You're now not, we can do it by satellite.
You're not driving around an MRAP. Yeah, and the satellite, you know, the laser beam of whatever. This was, so Goldwater, you read that book and you start getting the thing about where Goldwater really came from. Then Nixon, you know, he was in the army or something that, during Operation Paperclip, bringing the German Nazi guys over and stuff. So he's kind of in with the beginning of the CIA and such. Then you have, you know, the Reagan deal was, you got to have Bush, Mr. CIA, as your VP, or you'll see the White House as a you know, tourist, if at all, okay? Then you have, you know, Daddy Bush Sr., he's director of CIA, he becomes president. Well, that gives you warm and fuzzies. Then you have Clinton that worked with the Iran-Contra drugs for Bush and North and MENA, Arkansas, and drug, ew. Then you have, you know, Baby Bush, you know, W. Bush, www.warmonger.com. Then you got, you know, Obama representing somebody. And then we're going into this next election cycle, and you think they're going to stray very far from these guys. No. So what do you, you know, so Jeff, I mean, give us an opinion here. These guys are going to be part of the group, and which one's in and which one's out? Is Trump in or is he out?
I mean, there's a slim chance that he will have the groundswell that Reagan had. Slim chance. And in convention that they'll have to deal with him and they'll have to slip some one of these guys in as VP. Right? Slim chance. The reality is whoever the contractor lobbyists say is going to be president is going to be president. And if that happens to be Hillary Clinton this time, because that's how they make money, then it's going to be her. And if it happens to be one of the Walker Bush Corp boys, then it's going to be them. And if it needs to be another cutout, then it's going to be a cutout.
It's going to be what it's going to be.
It's going to be wherever that they make their trillions off of is who's going to be president.
Trillions. I mean, if that doesn't tell you
everything. I mean, we've talked about a billion. People get crazy. People kill over a billion.
Well,
they'll just kill regular people.
Till,
but now we're talking
real
about
money.
Trillions is when you obliterate nations to make trillions. That's what we're talking about here.
All right. So Frank is a little bit more idealistic, optimistic, and Trump represents something else. You know, at least whether he's supportive or not, it represents. What does it represent?
Trump.
Yeah. I mean, this whole movement, this whole election cycle, it's, you know, Jeff and I'm going like, that's how come I always go, nope, Jeb Bush, he's not done yet. He's still there, Jeb Bush.
Yeah, we're not done.
I have to give, Trump is doing what Trump does best.
Well, look, before he's
selling and people are buying and that's who he is. And hey, as long as people are buying, why shouldn't he be selling to make money? Go to it. I mean, if people buying, that's their own problem.
Was he short of money or something?
No, money's money. And that's what he does. He makes money and he's making money. And
all
that's
right.
He's doing what he does best.
Go,
and
Frank, go, man.
Best, more power to him.
So Trump is there because Rand is not. And the one reason I wanted to talk to you, I could get off this thing. You're here for a special reason for me, okay? Because you represent part of that Campaign for Liberty and Rand Paul. And it's important.
No official affiliation.
No official affiliation at this time. But you are more in the trenches more than anybody. And, you know, there's a lot of listeners out there that were part of this. People who are activists, whether it's through Freedom's Phoenix on their own and doing other things. And again, I'm not using you as the pinata because you're not officially speaking, but you are part of that crowd. And, you know, there's a lot of anger out there and frustration. Rand Paul keeps asking me for money. Right? I've donated money. I've given a lot of money. I've given a lot of money to Ron Paul. I've given to Campaign for Liberty. Again, I'm talking to you as you're not officially speaking
more
for them.
Requests.
But I know Campaign for Liberty is listening, and I've asked them on the radio to call in at some point. I'd love to talk to you, or a representative of Rand Paul's campaign. the thing is, you know, they've asked, and, you know, look, I love Rand and Ron. God knows Rand Paul. I'll be up front. He's the smartest person on that stage, bar none. Okay? I mean, he's too smart for the damn thing, and I think he gets frustrated, just like we're talking off the air.
And he's a good man.
He is.
Both Ron and Rand are
good people.
Genuine people.
And that's the problem. They're genuine, and they're too smart for the stage. I mean, I often say, like, Irv Homer was one of my mentors. He even said that, you know, the smartest people who could be president are too smart to be president. You know, they know not to get involved. The thing is, you know, my main concern is that they ask for money, and I can't, you know, I could give them a few extra bucks, you know, but I don't see the activism. I don't see that fire of Prometheus that we talked about. At the same time, back then, you know, I would actually spend time to talk to my father, who's sitting right here, who's visiting from Christmas. My mother. I had people that would never get involved in politics who dug deep and donated. And they did that in 2008. Then they did it again in 2012. And got to, not forgetting all the time that I spent, and many of us did, driving to Vegas and spending all this time. And then, as Ernie always likes to say, and I think it's a great analogy, you know, Lucy in the football. So I'm not going to pull it away this time, and pulls it away, right? When he pulled out, And here's my issue. Rand Paul keeps asking for money. And Rand Paul, I hope you guys are listening, the Campaign for Liberty, you have, in my opinion, unless I'm missing something, have never apologized or explained themselves to the activists.
Why now, should they, though?
Exactly. Well, that's the point. Should they? Maybe they shouldn't. And that thing is...
And trust me, I'm not apologizing for them, but they're just a corporation like any other corporation.
So I want them to be aware, because it seems like there's this missing thing where, I don't know, maybe I'm the only person that feels this way, and if so, then maybe that's why this is a moot discussion. But I can have my father on the air right this moment. I mean, he's probably a dancer right now. You know, when I sat there and asked him if he wanted to donate to Ron again or Rand Paul, the Rand Campaign for Liberty, I can't say on the air because as George Carlin, I think he used up all of George Carlin's words not to say about, don't you ever ask me to donate to the Pauls and Campaign for Liberty. He's right here. You want to say it, Dad? Here's your moment.
I don't mind.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you come ask.
Can we count on your support?
Yeah, yeah.
In 2016.
And this is not, again, I'm not using Mr. Greenspan here as an official thing, but this is something that has been burning in me and my family and others. When I want to help the Pauls, I want to help campaign, but when this issue has been thrown under the rug and it keeps getting pushed away somewhere, I'd like to be able to hear. And here's this is not me. This is my father, who's a standard voter, regular person that you learn to groom from all of our work to learn about activism and the libertarian concept. And this is what happens. You go ahead, Bob.
Your opinion is?
No, my opinion isn't. And just a little background. In 2012, Frank...
Get up right on the microphone. There you go.
My son Frank had to talk to me for about a year. And they get me really wound up in things. And when 2012 came, I became an activist. I was running, putting signs, joined one of the groups in Bethlehem, one in Wilkes-Barre, as far as the Ron Paul and Campaign for Liberty things. And when the convention came, Frank and I were putting money aside, looking for hotel rooms. We're going to go down to Florida. And I guess what really was that, we were blaming the Republican GOP for not allowing Ron Paul to have grounds big enough for a three-day convention, then a one-day convention. And then in between all this is happening, before the whole thing happened, Rand came out and backed Romney. Now, that was 3 weeks basically before his father was going into the convention. Now, just being an Italian old guy, I could never understand why the son threw in the towel when his father was still in the race. And because of that, I can no longer back the son, because the son, in my opinion, did not respect the father to let him run.
Okay, now, I got a question for Jeff. Okay, you think Ron knew that was going to happen?
You know, look, they're making decisions that they feel they need to make, for better or worse. I think Rand is looking for a different base of voters. Whether he's right or not, that's the calculation they're making. And, you know, what am I supposed to say about that? I don't think,
Frank,
we should sit here. I'd rather let's look at it logically as opposed to emotionally.
Count on your support, Frank?
No, not at this time.
Oh, then what do they got to do?
I want an opinion. I take their brochures. I write across them with a felt tip pen. Give me an answer from somebody. Why? Who's got photos of who? I don't know, but they should do something. And no, I will not.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
A blue Christmas.
I'm not obtuse today.
Shut up, man. They just keep going on. I'm having a blue Christmas with Jeff and Frank yelling at each other. You know, this is... Okay.
It's an Italian thing.
Yeah, of course. Okay. Of course.
You got to speak up or you won't get heard.
Dr. Tamburi is freaking, man. He's a... Why don't they kind of... He couldn't wait for Jeff to finally come on. And his end of year Christmas kind of... He's going to give it what for. And he's like... And you're the closest he could get. And he blames you. Okay? So... How come they don't, you know, those that won't leave us alone in this way? Why don't they, you know, it's that onion piece that they have. You know, why won't you hear me? Oh, don't, you know, stop, you know, don't go away. I mean, you know, to yelling at politicians. And I'm just, I use the political process. I haven't voted for over a decade. And, you know, but they, you run for U.S. Senate, you run for Congress, you run for Secretary of State, no less. You run, and you don't vote. And I can't wait for the reporter to say that. Go ahead, come on, you know you want to say it. Let's talk about it. Didn't you get the memo? Don't ever ask her any of that question, you know? So this is, you know, the discussion, and I keep bringing back the power. It doesn't matter how many millions of people around the world were impacted. It doesn't matter how many tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people that participated. It doesn't matter how many tens of millions, hundreds of millions that were given in support of the freedom. It doesn't matter. It wasn't done correctly because it didn't result in some kind of a vote total of a government computer that said in a percentage of whatever, and I needed that at the precinct committee, and I was there, and damn it! And I'm going, wow, what the hell were you looking at? You know, why was that so, the manifest, I'm going, ew! And that is the change. That is what we need to have, because what happens? The kids go to school, and I've been to these. I mean, it was Brophy Prep. We go for the first week every year during the 90s at Brophy Prep, and we did one day on money. We did one day on the criminal justice system. We did one day on, the teacher brought us in, man, give them what for. And I'm going, these are the people that need to understand what's really going on. And it's Generation Next. That's my focus. Always has been.
So let's put a little control around this. Little mock debate, okay? And I'm going to be the cutout, okay? Because I have nothing
Define
to do with it.
Define cutout. What the hell is cutout?
I'm the situational representative who does. It doesn't actually connect to the placeholder, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's put a little control around this. I know you want to talk about this on the air specifically. So let's do a minute. And a minute. Can we time it? Can you keep to a minute?
Got it,
now
right
give me
here.
A minute. Minute, minute, minute.
All
okay.
Right, say when
so
you
let's
was
go.
Gonna go.
Frank,
first.
Roll. Minute.
All right, go.
All right. So, in my opinion, if they're going to be asking for money for this new campaign, that is Rand Paul and or CFL, then I think they need to address that there is an anger. My father's just one of many who refuse to donate or support the campaign because of him pulling out a second time and asking for a lot of money. There was like a money bomb literally a couple days before Rand endorsed Mitt Romney. And then a week after that, Ron Paul came bailed out. There was a lot of, I mean, everyone dug deep for that last money bomb when they knew that they were going to be switching teams and bail on Ron himself. I mean, between Rand and the campaign. That's probably the part that was the most offensive. And even though most people don't remember that, but that's what occurred. Now, the argument is, should they have to apologize and to all their supporters if they're going to be asking for money? And I guess maybe, and again, I'll turn it over to you here, but the argument is maybe they don't have to, they don't care. But to me, either they don't know that their supporters are angry, they know and they don't care.
Okay.
So that's the question.
So, real quick. So I'm going to give you why I was in it, right? Uh-huh. Besides for my belief in paleoconservatism, which Ron Paul represents. And I am a paleoconservative, although Ernie's trying to pull me out of that. I was there to jazz up the next generation of Republican Party activists. That's was my I guess my selfish motive of being involved. Okay, so that's where I was coming from, not any of this other stuff. So I'm going to be Ernie for a second, right? So, and now don't answer. This is rhetorical, and your 1 minute rebuttal to what I'm saying here, you can address it. But so what? So what are you going to do about it? So what? Right? So that's rhetorical, and you can address that in a minute. Then you asked another thing right at the end of your minute, which is you're very you know, you're invested in this. You really believe that they should do something. I don't know why, but whatever, you believe that, and that's okay. It's your belief. Let me finish. And then
I'm not arguing.
I know.
You can talk 5 minutes.
Okay.
I don't
okay.
care.
No
interrupting in the
okay.
debate.
And then
talking.
You proceeded. Hold on. You proceeded to put the pieces together yourself. You have the answer. You gave it at the very, very end of that last minute.
Ding, ding.
You figured it out. I'd love to hear it again. You have the answer.
Okay. That was so. The summit.
No, he can keep going.
Wait, it's back to us.
You and I. You done? I mean, I can keep going.
No, go.
First of all, you don't have to gradually figuring it out. I'm not that obtuse, but maybe I am, because you know that's the thing. You're talking in code. You know, you got to figure it out at the end. Well, you tell me which it is.
You connected.
You
the dots.
Tell me which
not,
it is.
I don't. Have
oh,
to do
see,
that.
That's the problem. See, no one will say it. Why don't people say it? I'll say
it. You said it.
What did I say?
Say it again. You said it at the end of your minute.
So what are you afraid? This is what I'm saying. Do they not know that they ticked off their supporters? Because if they look at the ratings, 3%, like Donald Trump said,
how
next time you'll
so
be off
hard
the edge.
For you to realize that they don't care,
or they just don't care. Okay,
they don't care.
So they just don't care.
Don't care.
So that's the point. So they don't care.
Ernie, I don't know.
Well, see, that's my point. See,
Frank, why are you looking for an answer from someone else?
The reason I'm frustrated is, and I maybe because there's a certain reason why you can't respond,
The
reason that I'm frustrated is this is the type of response you get from politicians. It's well, you know what? We're not going to address
it. You're looking
we're not
for someone else
it.
To do it for you. You've already done it. You figured it out.
Oh, wow. Kudos. Well, I'd like to.
No one owes you anything.
All right.
No one owes you anything.
So, therefore, the official answer, I'm guessing from Jeff and from Ernie and from I, is that the Rand Paul group and Campaign for Liberty, they know they screwed over their voters and they don't care about their voters. So if that's the official consensus that we're all coming to, then therefore, why the hell are they still asking me for money? Because clearly they don't care. And if you don't, if you Campaign for Liberty disagree with this assessment that the three of us, including my father, are fourth, then you know what? If you disagree with what our conclusion is, because I guess I figured it out, right, all of a sudden, right today, well, then therefore, get on the air and let us know before you hit 2% or 1%. Because if it's only 3%.
Why should they? They're a business. Why should they?
Well, the business model seems to be failing.
And
I don't think
they sit around a table and they're like, how do we get this money and then pull the rug out? I don't think it's that purposeful.
Right.
I think you're looking for a design where there isn't one. But in the end effect, I can't argue with you.
Yeah, what do you expect Jeff to say? No, we really do care. It says here in the bylaws.
No, well, I've just heard on whether it's, you know, Ron Paul shows or on and on, and I've never heard this addressed the way, at least maybe I just wanted to talk to myself and hear myself vet for my own counseling. It's cheaper than a damn counselor, okay?
Okay,
so I'm sorry,
I'll give you a perfect
but the
example.
Fact that when he's sitting there, not even he's saying, "Well, I'm not going to say," I mean, you know, just be honest. Just let's.
I
have
am
a,
not
honest,
prevented from talking
yeah,
about any
all right,
of this.
Well, but the thing is, either you know or don't care. You're not saying maybe getting passionate about it. If maybe you didn't feel that they did that.
You're looking right? for something that isn't there. You're looking for something. You want something. You,
what do you think
want,
I want
someone
you
to give you
want.
Something.
Tell me what I want.
An explanation. There isn't one.
There isn't one?
You're looking for something. You're looking for a person to
there's
to
no
do
explanation?
Some, there's no. They were asking for money and people give it. You can give it if you want or not.
Okay, this is what I want to give you.
All right.
We're going to go
it's
into the
it's just pretty
after
simple.
Show. This is, see, it's starting to get
Trump's
fun.
Doing the same
go
thing.
Go to the archive where it really gets interesting, and Frank says what he really feels. Okay.
This is, and maybe Jeff will, too, at that point.
No, I am saying what I really feel. Trump's doing
not.
The same thing. And he's
say it. Just say it.
Trump.
No,
okay,
no.
Trump's a better fundraiser than Rand.
Say that the Campaign for Liberty knows that they screwed him over and they don't
know.
Care.
It's not a
just
policy decision where people sit around and wring their hands and say, "How are we going to get Frank
but
today?"
You said they don't
that
care.
Doesn't happen.
But they just don't care about care.
No,
that
they're running a business
there,
like
so
everybody
they
else.
Don't care,
no,
right?
I can't
metric.
Answer that. I was there.
Okay, it's very simple. Campaign for Liberty is not looking to please all the people out there. They're looking to elevate Campaign for Liberty. And when it first started, what did they do? Now, one of the first things Campaign for Liberty did, they spent $350,000 on a Republican U.S. Senate race in Colorado of some neocon.
It was an issue-based ad. They have never exceeded their mandate that I know of.
They're inside of what they're allowed to do. You look at the bylaws, and that's where the people in Minneapolis, St. Paul, wanted to have a say. No, we need enough wiggle room to be GOP.
They have to follow the law. They're 501c4.
Yeah, they were official.
All right, this is the deal.
I'm looking for is it to be said on the
say,
air?
Then say your opinion. Don't
ask
someone
else.
Now?
Hell yeah.
Oh no, no.
Then say your opinion. Let it go. Don't look for someone else to do it.
Get
for
on
you.
The mic.
I'm on the mic.
No, you're not on the mic. See, it's got
I said,
the wave needs to be
rather than bitching at others and telling them, tell me what I want to know. You
hey, Dad,
already know.
Dad, you
say your own opinion.
What would you like to hear from?
Say
from
your own
Campaign
opinion.
For Liberty.
What do you
I'm
want
not
to say
their spokesman.
They're sorry?
I am
we're
not
sorry?
Their spokesman.
We're really sorry. Give us money now because we're really sorry.
I mean,
we promise we won't play football
this
time.
And this is a bit biased. You know, I don't want you guys to think it's biased because he's my dad and we have this figured out because you really haven't talked about it except when I called Dad. My father, remember, I donated to CFL and to Rand, and when I asked my father and others, and they all said,
"I donate to Rand."
My better half, she said, "She'll
I know
never
what
donate."
It's, I know what I'm donating. What it's happening
I'm the
with
only,
it?
I'm the only one.
Fully informed.
I'm the only one that has, despite all of this. So you know, maybe there's listeners out there who all agree with Mr. Greenspan that hey, you know, it's just called as we say in Japanese, "shikataganai." You know, it's just things happen. Oh, it's the way of the world. I mean, that's just what it is, and maybe I'm the only one that feels this way. Apparently,
no, I know there's lots of people
no,
who
of
feel
people
like
feel
you.
Well,
way.
If a lot,
a lot
of people
feel,
feel
like
this
you.
Way, the question is, does Campaign for Liberty know this?
Start your own organization.
No,
do
no,
the
no.
Ernie
the
approach.
CFL,
if you want something, go do it.
Do you think CFL knows these people are angry about
yes.
it? Yes or no?
I'm sure for over time that they've experienced that. I've seen it directly. Yes.
Yes.
I don't think
right.
they
yes.
sit
okay.
around.
Not in my mind.
So there, exactly.
Okay. I don't think
I'm sure
they sit around
the
saying,
okay.
and they
don't care.
Count all the people.
So why do you think they don't care? I'm curious. When they look, when they keep looking for fundraising.
Because it's more profitable to not care.
It's they're running their organization their way. You can start an organization and run it your way.
And a lot
don't
of these
get
guys
mad
do.
At them. Just
see,
don't do
why,
it.
Why,
if you don't like it?
I'll throw out a name here. Jeff knows. Doug Weed. Okay? This guy is all about databases, the Christian, the database, the Amway database. Going to, when I saw him in the Rompa, I already knew where this is going. This is a database. Because what has value? Ooh, where'd all those gazillions of people go? I had probably the best database just because, you know, in the newspaper, they said, I don't want to go talk to Ernie if you want to. 92, Ross Perot, man. I had thousands. I mean, it was a stack of, oh, my God. I put it in to a database, VisiCalc on a Model 4 TRS-80 Tandy, okay? And then everybody on that database got a copy of everybody on that database. Mm-hmm. I step back. We're done. And they wonder why Arizona was the number one state for him. I know why. Because spontaneous order. I just said, look, I don't have anything to do with this, but I tell you what my thing was, election lawsuit. They didn't have a method for him to even get on the ballot as an independent in Arizona. It didn't exist. And I go, I was going on the Arizona flight for independence, ultralight around the state. Good. I go, you know what? I don't have to do it anymore because it's going to be found out. Arizona was the last primary state, and there was no mechanism for him to get on. I knew that was going to come out. Neon freaking, I told you so. So what happened? Am I a big Perot supporter? Hell no. Didn't care. I'm libertarian. I go, look, I'll fall on the sword to not have the opportunity to not vote for him. I'm going, you guys don't understand. I'm just like with Frank here, as the process was unconstitutional, illegal, and unfair, and not what they promised. Well, I learned a long time ago, going through the process, that it is designed that way.
Everything is geared that way. The rewards are that way. The ability, the way they even do the pack and how you roll over and campaigns and the money gets to go to, and I fund the multi-generational of my friends and family. I mean, you know, that's how the system is set up. And the reason Jeff and I get along so well is he and I know this heart and soul down to our bones from the beginning. How can we make use inside the system, Campaign for Liberty, Republican conventions, and when we need to help each other, we do. Who's at the conventions with people helping pass out and in the parking lot and doing and signs or whatever? Because I did whatever I could to help Jeff do what he did because I knew he understood the real game. And I and he would help me and let me know whatever and kind of
what's going on. You might want to look over here.
So we worked very well together, but why? Because we lost the idealism and the fairness gene and the what was supposed to happen and what the promise was that has affected you. And I went through this anger. I went through this. What fueled my lawsuits?
I did too. No, no, no. I think you're
I went through it in 1998 and 99.
No. You guys, you're not really, you're assuming what my anger and passion is for the wrong things. First of all, you're not understanding. You think it's because I'm like this impassioned Ron Paul guy and he let me down or all this. That's not what this is.
They lie.
This is about principle in many ways, but it's also this concept. I'm going to point out, I understand this duality you're talking about, Ernie. It's what I talk about on the show all the time. I just said it last hour that what Ron Paul himself said and what I said was that it's the bridge between. It's the activism and the culture people who just say, screw the system, just put the signs up and get it done, and then the people that are inside the system. I just said that earlier. And what he just said is exactly
my
point.
Ask you a question.
That you're in the system and he doesn't want to be part of the system.
I think you're thinking it's too complex. Let me give you an example. You're a naturopath.
I'm gonna give a metaphor. I just complimented and agreed with what he was just saying.
What is your passion about? What do you want Campaign for Liberty and the Pauls to what?
Well, it's not just the Pauls. I think I just feel it's frustrating watching opportunity get to such a level, and maybe for politicians not to. It's not about just the Pauls, like they're missing their chance, like the poor Pauls, and they got me angry. I could just disconnect from them, which I have, and just say, okay, whatever. I'm not that angry about that. My frustration is seeing people that seem to truly want to change the system and help, and I can't tell, are they really that obtuse to how to what's going on around them?
No.
You and I said earlier that people in the parties, you know, in local politics, they really are not as bright as people think before you get involved. Of all people,
it's easy to take over the party if you get enough numbers.
And if you understand the system works, and God knows we did.
Right.
And there's one group of definitely of people that are not idiots, and that's the Pauls. If anyone understands the system, they're the people that at least I've learned to respect their opinions with things, and they seem to have their pulse on how things work. At least I'd like to think so. And yet, here we have the whole 2 times he ran for president, and then, you know, drop the ball the way a lot of us think, 3. And then you have Rand going. And now you have 2 sets of groups of people that don't seem to support them. You have the Ernie Hancock types and the activists that every time you say Rand Paul's running, they're like, oh, so what? I mean, I asked how many people at Ernie's Christmas party, and I only mentioned the names. They're just like, I don't care. So the activism, they've shut that down and said, thanks, but no thanks to you activists. We're going to do it our way and do it all by the book. And then you have another group that they go for fundraising, and people like my father and others, and say, hey, we're CFL, and they put Ron Paul's name at the bottom of everything. And I know technically CFL has to be distant from the Rand Paul campaign, but, you know, they're kind of in between there. And yet, they're not getting a lot of money. I read from all the insider stuff about how much money they spent to try and do that caucus there in Kentucky to switch that. He's obviously having money issues trying to keep his campaign afloat. Otherwise, he can do more advertising. People that they ask for money, they've ticked off and don't seem to care.
What do you want?
And
I got to ask
people,
you, what is it that you
want? What would make you happy?
Want?
Make
what
me
do you
happy.
Want?
Well, I've told you what I want. What I would like is...
Give it to me in 3 bullet points. Number one, I want...
I did it in 1.
Okay.
That is, I want CFL and or, better yet, the Pauls to make a public statement to the... Wait, you asked me. To their supporters, the people they keep asking to support Rand, right, and for money, if they're asking me for their support and they're counting on us, the activists, they keep counting on my activism and my support of their philosophy and CFL and Rand Paul and Ron Paul. They put Ron Paul's name in everything. If they're counting on my supports because they looked at me as a member of that coalition, and in that coalition of people are ticked off of what they did and felt let down and felt disenfranchised from what they did. So I would like, if they're going to keep asking me and assume I'm part of the club, then I'm telling you what I need, and that is I need an apology and or an official explanation, even just political. Just admit that, you know, you cut your losses so that you could go for Rand, and maybe you thought Rand had a better chance in the future campaign.
That's not going to happen. Well, so now what?
That's it.
Yeah,
you asked me, so that's what.
Okay, so that's not going to happen. So therefore, right, it must be. You said it.
I said what?
If you assume you're part of the club, you assume if they're going to still ask you for money.
Care.
People ask money for all the time.
Well, you assume they don't care. Maybe they just don't.
I don't care.
I go in the grocery store and they want me to buy all kinds of products I don't buy. They ask me constantly. Mm-hmm. Yes, it can get overwhelming at times. You tune it out. They're going to keep asking. You watch TV commercials. They ask all day for money.
Okay.
They call this,
I give you
pay
a good
that.
Example.
It doesn't matter.
If they don't care, then let them say they don't care.
But let the results speak for themselves. If that's how you feel, then
they don't value the people that supported their organization's opinion as much as you do. I can guarantee you that. That is not the opinion that they value. Mm. They value something else. What? I don't know. Don't care. It's not my. I don't care.
Not
they
our
don't
business.
Care. I don't care.
Right. It's not. That's their business.
That's
not
it.
Ours.
You know. I don't care. So the thing is, everybody. Oh, you should care. I can't believe you don't care, and you should be at the top of caring. And I'm going, but I don't care.
But what I hear at the bottom of that is, I want, I want, I want, I want. Well, if you want, and I'm not talking to you, right? I'm speaking kind of general here. You want something? Go freaking do it. That's where I think Ernie's philosophy is dead on. If you want something, then figure out how to do it.
Yeah, they keep wanting my money, and they want my support.
If you don't like
they,
it,
they
don't
want
get
my
it.
Money support. Well, I'm
okay,
not.
I give you a really
That's
good
the point.
Example.
They want it.
I give you a good example, and you can see this all just stitched up.
And I'm not defending them. Trust me. I'm just using logic to the situation.
I got a button. I can turn it. We go to the discussion group. You know who I'm talking about over here.
Yes.
These are the boys. I mean, the GOP, the guys that know the guys. Well, one of them is a bundler for Rand, okay? Which means that he raises how much or whatever. He gets to be in on the phone call every week or something like I care. Oh, Ernie, what are you going to do? I said, oh, you're confusing me with somebody who gives a crap, okay? I don't care. Well, there's the secret of we're going to tell the secret. Don't you want to know the secret? Well, if the secret doesn't have him up there saying it from the podium, then I don't care. You know, it doesn't mean anything to him. Yeah, but really, he's an anarchist. You know, the secret is that he's going to use the job going, well, it doesn't tell me anything. I don't care. You know, if you're not going to do at least what his dad did, you know, I don't care. Yeah, but the only way that we're going to get, I don't care. Because all the whatever you think is going to happen to give you a better chance of getting the nomination or go further. I mean, you're not, all you have to do is just not drop out. Get a couple of delegates. Go to the freaking convention. Will you do that? Your dad had this enormous, big, giant, you know, wind in his sails, and he didn't. What makes you think I'm going to think Lucy's not going to pull the football? I'm going, no, I don't care. This is the one thing that you learn being in politics from a long time ago. I'm going, they operate on a totally different level. It is not to tell you the truth. It is not to get you to do. It's always to get you to do what they want. So you just got to figure out what they want.
Yeah,
they're
that's right.
building a big, giant suitcase of database, of voters, of influence, of whatever, and that's how they think the game is played, to do what they want. And they promise it's going to be good for you. Pinky swear. We know what's best for you, and you need to be lied to, and you know.
And don't focus just on the polls. This isn't just the polls.
It's all
every one of them.
Course,
Trump's got the most valuable database of this entire election. Everybody wants that
data. And RNC is going to kiss his ass.
Pay him big money.
They're going to be worth a billion dollars. Yeah, what a bastardship you are. A billion dollars. I mean, so the thing is that when we go through this process, and having done this, I was always an ideologue. I was always an idealist. I was always, that's the big criticism they had. What's the difference between Rand and Ron?
Ron is an idealistic libertarian. Mm. Rand is a practical libertarian. And I'm going, practical libertarian? I'm sure there is such a thing, you know?
But you can debate that all day long. What does it matter?
Don't care.
Right.
I don't care. So my thing is I'm going, is there going to be another opportunity for us to be able to move the ball forward? Is there somehow that we can, you know, educate Generation Next and everybody else? Is there some way that we can, you know, throw, now Campaign for Liberty could have been a tool for that, but they missed the mark.
And I bought in, and I believed in it. And they still
abandoned the very people that brought them to the dance.
Now, that said, they still have excellent training, and everybody should take
it.
But, you know, you don't exactly. have to do their thing, but, take that training.
I'm a product of this. We could be sitting here promoting Rand and promoting all of them. Instead, you know, I understand the politics behind it, but I'm also speaking in behalf of many of the listeners, to be honest. So, if you and I are having just a one-on political talk, trust me, I'm much more sane than this. I'm speaking for the countless people
frustration. It's different.
Because you don't hear it on the air. By the time someone has a radio presence, then they get all political and they get all professional.
The game
and
is
you
different, I think, than what you're thinking, right? So when you, if you were to work from the, if you start with the end in mind and work backwards, it's you know, it's about the delegate. I know you have these facts, right? And I know you have the logic.
I know.
But working backwards, right? Working backwards from the convention back, you have to have the majority of delegates at the convention. You have to have a certain number of delegations, and each of those delegations have to have the majority. So then you work backwards. What states do you get those in? You work backwards from that. Have I filed? Do I have the ground game to get the local delegates, to get the state delegates, to get those delegates?
Do you elect the state chair?
Then you have the fake candidates. So here's a great example. The best example I have is, if you remember Iowa in 12, right? I'm sorry, they're evangelical Christians. They aren't going to vote for a Mormon. However you might feel about that, they're not going to vote for a Mormon. They're not going to go caucus for a Mormon. And that's just the political reality of it. So what did they do? They ran Santorum as the evangelical Christian, right, to get those delegates, and he dropped out, I think, or in the middle of South Carolina, or very soon after Iowa.
And where did those
delegates shift? Whoosh, right over to the Mormon. That's how the game is played.
Which is what Huckabee's doing right now.
So on that stage, there's maybe 1 to 2 actual candidates, maybe. The rest of them are doing the Santorum maneuver that was done in Iowa. It's just more complex with all the other states, and their payoff is the PAC money. That's how it works. That's how it works. And should Rand, you know, did Rand pull punches and did he allow his cutout Trump to overpower him and take the people that should have gone to him? Probably. I'm not, this cutout thing.
Whatever. I don't even know what you mean, cutout.
So the fake candidate. So just like Santorum was the cutout for Romney in Iowa. Right, Trump was to take.
So you're like cutting out support.
Yeah,
cutting out
in this case. Yeah, so Trump was the one who was supposed to take the Rand people, and
I thought you meant like a cardboard cutout or something.
And it's like that though. And he took a large portion. He took you. So he did his job. He just went out of control. I don't mean out of control. Out of their control, you know. And hey, you know, it is what it is. But the point is that's how the game. That's simply how it works. So until you believe in systems and that the fact that there is a system and things work a certain way, I have an engineering background. Ernie, you know, even though you don't like it, you know it's there. Right? That's how it works, for better or worse.
But Jeff, the thing is, I'm not disagreeing with that. We're going to be talking the weeds. We can talk that.
Rand missed his chance. Then he's 3%. He's not coming back.
At the end of the day, I mean, you get all the weeds and say that okay, it's all strategy. They knew. They don't care. Well, you know what? I guess the question, I mean, ultimately, is how's it working out for you guys? Because I'm trying to get it. We can talk the politics and the numbers, and I definitely. Definitely get it. It was the first time you and I are on the air talking, or in public, just privately talking, really, doing it on the air. But trust me, I get the process. You know, you and I could bore people together, you know, all day talking about broker conventions. I spent at his party explaining to 10 people around a fire what a broker convention is and how all that works, and it's stuff people weren't even interested in until all of a sudden it hit the news again. But I'm trying to get back to sometimes we, especially in this type of not to show, but many of us as libertarians, we spend so much time when we get to our discussions and our philosophy groups. We talk the philosophy. We'll argue the 10th Amendment. We'll talk about case law. We'll talk about all of this. The average American has no clue about it. I mean, I hate to use a Chris Christie line because he tries to be the populist there, going, hey, who cares about all this stuff? We have to get back to, you know, steak and mashed potatoes. Get back to the real truck driver out
chicken
there.
Chicken in every pot.
Yeah, exactly. So it's the ultimate populist line. But at the same time, and I'm not trying to in any way think that my father is that simplistic in any way. He's very, very educated with a lot of these issues and watches. But at the same time, you know, these are the voters that don't have the time to sit back and are going to have the football, you know, quarterback type of discussion that we're having.
Endorsements are so important.
And that's why turning around and saying that ultimately they don't care about the people they asked money from before and don't care. That's why I've had such an issue about it, because I see
it's not
this
that
missed
they
opportunity.
Don't, I don't think it's that they sit around thinking that they don't care. It's that
it's not waiting.
There's a mismatch in expectations, right? So clearly. I'm going to use a defunct brand. I don't know if it's out there anymore. Dial soap. Some people love Dial soap, and then you find out it's got an ingredient in it that you didn't expect, and you're very disappointed, and you're really, really mad, and you write a letter to the chairman. I mean, it's just another corporation. Right? Or people
Fireball like, cinnamon whiskey's got with antifreeze in it.
Right.
It has a
naked,
flavor additive.
Naked juice, right? So naked juice was supposed to be everybody thought it was organic. It wasn't. It had pesticides in it or whatever it was. And you know, hot dogs have human DNA. You know, I that disappoints me. It pisses me off, and I try to minimize the amount of hot dogs I intake as a result. But what are you gonna do? It's the way it is.
You do something else.
If you
have your own kosher organic hot dog.
Yeah, create another hot dog company or get a different soap brand or do whatever your own.
Yeah, the thing is, there's a lot of wiggle room for it. I mean, Trump is a perfect example. Trump could sit there and say whatever, and yet people don't, they're not, he's getting hung up with the issues. It's about the principle of him respecting, I guess, what other people find or hold important. And that's the difference.
You're
with
right.
Trump.
You're in
and
that respect,
when Rand
Frank.
Paul,
you're right.
And if the Pauls are saying we don't care about this, we're just going to play this game.
I don't think it's as principled as you say. But where you're right about one thing. He is a salesman. That's who he is. That's what he does. Mm-hmm. And what do salesmen do? They listen to their customers and they respond to their customers.
Right.
And that's exactly what he's doing.
Do you
and
think
you know,
Trump's really
good on him for
to popularity of
it what? Only is growing. So apparently so.
Now, my opinion of it is a little bit different.
I don't know. Does he
Trump,
is he
you're not getting it all.
Trump is doing. Well, come on, Trump is doing well because the more he goes, says whatever the hell he does, he's perceived as not being them.
Mm-hmm.
That's
well,
what I see.
Because politicians don't listen.
And
he's a salesman.
And
he's listening
had
to
that.
His
Rand,
customers.
That's the part that Rand completely blew, and Ron Paul too. They don't understand. See, people like me were involved not just because of the Federal Reserve.
You had a good point, and now you're getting it back to you. So take your personal.
I had a good point with
me. Take your personal desires out and get back to the logic of it. Rand had an opportunity.
What is that supposed to mean?
I had a great point. Let's explore. It. You said Rand had an excellent opportunity and squandered
it.
Let's explore that.
No, you tell me
let's
first what point
that.
Was not a good point. Because
you got it back to I. So let's talk about...
What was the I part?
All right. I'm not going to sit here and take
no,
and be abused.
No.
By,
it's not abused. I'm your
yeah,
asking
it is.
Me. No, you're asking...
Let's talk about... A mutual point, something you said that I think's interesting. Let's explore it. You said Rand had an opportunity that he squandered. Can we explore that for a minute?
Well,
what did he squander?
He squandered the point that I think that he was part of the outside system. That is what I was part of the Ron Paul campaign for. Okay, I'm not sure what word triggered you for that, but this
unless
was
it goes against Israel,
this was the frustration. Some people, many, I don't know what it was, but many people got involved with the Federal Reserve, which is me. Remember, I mean, well, you don't know because I voted for Ron Paul the first time in 88. You know, I mean, I've been there a long time. So I've been part of this movement for a long time, a libertarian when I was 20. And when there was no YouTube, no one was involved in this. And people did not seem to understand that there was more than two parties. There was all of this. And every time I got involved, and I went through the hellfire like Ernie as well, of getting involved at first, and you realize how broken the system is, how corrupt. How is it you can have four candidates on President of the United States and only two in the debates?
And I don't disagree with you, but now you've gone way out here. So let's bring it back. What's the opportunity?
I am getting back. Okay. This is how I'm making an argument. I'm making a point. That is the perspective that I have seen of the system being so corrupt after 20-something years of being involved with it. So when I got involved with the Ron Paul campaign, it wasn't simply because he was talking free money, which is a huge part. I've already been there, done that. It was the fact that he was able to start to expose the system of the corruption of how someone can have an outside point of view and how the blockages will be put there. That's what Ernie already understood.
Yes.
That's what you did not understand at the time.
Yes, I did.
Because you were part of the system. You said you no. I'm not saying it's a knock. I was part. I understood it too. You were trying to make the movement through the system. Ernie's already be like, why bother voting? Because it's never going to happen. I've seen it that way too. And it was, I'm seeing it from both. I thought, here's a way where Ron Paul is going to hit that wall, because I know how corrupt this is. And all the delegates and all this stuff, just like Ernie would say, is going to stop because they will not allow him
there.
So
Frank, you lost me.
So you went from Rand Paul, a good opportunity, to I'm disappointed.
So let's.
So my point is that is what Ron Paul's issue or strength to me was. It wasn't just his issues. It was the fact he was saying something the system would not allow.
So let me see
Let me just finish the point, okay? And then I'll open it up. You can have as many minutes as you want with it, because you're asking a question and you want a quick soundbite with it. And I'm trying to say, this is what my support for Rand. I'm sorry, for Ron Paul was. And then he dropped out the first time when he was almost about to make it, and not to win. It was to expose and say, look, here's another voice, and we can fight at the convention. We can have other options.
That was a win for me.
Yeah, exactly.
Win.
So then he did it a second time and pulled out. So now here's Rand Paul. And Rand Paul was the most interesting man in politics. The idea to me also was, here's someone that was going to take those concepts and be dangerous to the system again. And at least in theory, he was trying to do more on the inside. He was going to try and be the outsider from within. Okay, that was at least the Trojan horse secret, probably. We'll get to that later. That's what he, to me, his appeal could have been. And the first thing he did when Donald Trump announced, I was shocked, to be honest. I knew Donald Trump would go all the way. I mean, I said it on the air when people were all mocking me about it, because people didn't see the anger that was brewing. That's what you're seeing right here. People said Trump's just a flash in the pan. He'll never make it. And I predict, if you listen to the old shows, I couldn't believe no one else couldn't see what was about to happen. I saw it because of this. And this is the frustration. I know I'm just like going off on it here, and you know I'm not trying to abuse you here. But the outside system keeps going, well, Frank, you don't get it. They keep telling me I don't get it, but his polls keep going up.
I didn't say
all
you didn't
I know
get
is
it.
Rand thought he got it. He's at 3%. And the people thought they all got Donald Trump. They seem to not get it. So that's the part I understand. Everyone tells me I don't get it. So therefore, Donald Trump took that outsider component that was more important than anything else, and Rand blew it and that component. So that's why, I'm sorry for the long story, but I wanted to set it up that it wasn't just, well, the outsider he claims to be. It is in the core of the American people now. And that's what I think Ron and Rand had a lot of support for. And they didn't see it. They didn't
see
it.
You see that core every three or four presidential election cycles. I'm old enough to see. You know, ask Daddy Frank here. I mean, do you see this? We're going to. And he lied to me again.
Well, they do that. I mean, the thing is, when I started getting involved with the polls myself, which was later on, I thought they were better than the other politicians of the Democrats and the GOP. I think those two parties really suck. And what they do is they screw over people at every level, and they lie, and everything that they do. You live long enough and you see them all lying, the people under them lie, and the people that are in the menial jobs inside the agencies lie, and they tell the public what they want for control of the idiot population. And that's why the Democrat is running hard with the immigrants, with everybody else coming into the country. They can't read, they can't write, they can't speak, but they're going to vote for them. It's a numbers game, and that's why they stop everybody from even wanting to be registered to vote or to be a citizen, which is a total disgrace, and why military men still go into service And when they go fight for these idiots, and then they come back, and they can't even get medical care, and who's been in office all the time?
So here's, here's my question, though. You've got the answer, what are you mad about?
No, you know what I'm mad about? Because it's, you're right, it's in me, myself, I thought the Pauls were better. And what I'm finding out, it's like they're not better. It's like having your wife or your husband go out and fool around on you, and when you came back, you're pissed. Why are you pissed when your wife is doing somebody else? It's because you thought she was better.
It's an Italian explanation,
you
right,
Jeff? You thought she was better. You screw the politics, Jeff. You're too much involved in the politics.
What are you mad at me for? No, I'm not saying you're wrong.
You've been to the school too long.
I'm not saying you're wrong. What are you looking at me for?
All right. He needs to take control. Now, I want to hear Jeff's... thank you for letting me say all that and explain. I do appreciate it. I do want to hear Jeff's response, though.
Go. I just... You made a point that there was an opportunity that you believe the Pauls had. Paul had. He may very well have had it, and he chose another direction. It was disappointing. And I think if I'm to restate it succinctly, that there was people outside of the system, maybe we're 3-5%, maybe we're 7-8%, whatever that percentage is, and there was an opportunity that it appeared to work within the system to expand that message to 15-20-25-30%. And that opportunity was lost. Trump picked it up, and good for him.
But see, that was their rationale. And this now, after this discussion, the audience listen to this, you'll understand the significance of this conversation that I have with Ron. I go, I'm feeling the same. I know the people are feeling the same. When I went and met with Dr. Paul in congressional, I was in Washington and 10 or whatever it was, and I'm running for national chair, Libertarian Party at the time. And I'm you know, of course, Ron, I want to get involved. He don't give a crap. But I was in Washington, you know, yo, what's up, peace. I go in, and I go, all right, all these people want these questions. They're going, they want to know, Charles Goyette wants to know if you'll kind of something write in here and sign a book or something. This guy wants you to sign this book. You know, this guy wants to say hello, big sloppy from, you know, this person. Oh, and everybody wants to know what the hell was with Campaign for Liberty and that Colorado thing. He blew up at me. He goes, hey, well, if you want to know what it's all on the webpage and go there, I go, whoa. You're assuming I care, man. I don't know. I don't go to the web. I don't care. I just it said I'd ask. I don't care. So, you know, we're good. It's going something else. So then I'm going, and I just got a question, and this was the Frank Tamburi in me. I'm going, look, I just need to know what I can count on. That's all I want to know. What if anything that we're channeling Ron Paul or Rand, whatever's going on, I just need to know what I can count on. My vote, words out of my mouth, rest is politics. That is exactly what we've been talking about, is what he meant. The rest is politics. Mm-hmm. And I knew exactly why. I go, okay, cool. I don't play politics. Peace out. It's been real. I left the meeting 10 minutes early. I had like a half hour with him. There was a family out there waiting. I go, hey, let them have the extra. It's been real. Thanks. You know, it's good to see you. Peace. Go. There was nothing left to be said. So I'm going, all right, we're good. You know, so I understand he plays his role. But he looks at it from the inside, too. Here's a guy that's been a congressman for decades, since the 70s when they went off the gold standard. He understood what he was up against. So when he said, yeah, you don't understand, and kind of blah, 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 when he pulled out in 08, you know, what was he up against? When right before that, less than a month before that, when I was in Washington, or I had a conversation, when was it? I think I can't remember which conversation, but I asked him. I have short conversations with Dr. Paul. And I just said, no, look, I just need to know, what are we up against? What is it you're really going? I remember it was in Washington, D.C. in April 08. He had been called in by the RNC to go meet with them.
Oh, that's right. I remember that.
Remember that? So you wanted to go. They
and
wanted to go
right
explain
after
it to
that
them.
Is when they called you, when they invited you guys to go to D.C. Right after.
Exactly.
That. Forgot about that.
They were like, hey, we're going to, you know, let you in kind of this, and this is the deal, and get over it, and you're like death to whatever.
I think it was an audit the Fed deal, by the way.
Okay, yeah, that was the thing. Mm-hmm. They gave him the chairmanship of the subcommittee that was over Bernanke. Then he took Bernanke out from underneath that subcommittee. Oh, yeah, how'd that work out? Okay? Mm-hmm. Don't trust these sons of bitches. So I asked Dr. Paul, I go, what are we up against? I just want to know, what is this fog that, you know, you're up, you're, this thing, what are we up against? He goes, Karl Rove.
Mm.
Say no more. the machine, the Walker Darth Bush Vader. Machine of the whatever, these guys that represent the big on high. He's like, and I could tell without saying it, be lucky you got as far as you did. Take the win and go to the next level.
So you know where I was disappointed? You know where I was disappointed? And I'm just, you know, I just don't show it. Maybe it's only because I'm half Italian. I'm not sure, but...
What's the other half?
You know my last name. But it goes through your mom. If you're Catholic, right? Jewish, goes through your mom. Anyway, I was disappointed about the delegates, right? Because I had trained all those and spent all that time. And, you know, I was really looking forward to energizing that next generation of Republican activists to through the convention process, that the fun of it, the excitement, the contention, how to prevail and how to expand yourself and replicate yourself. Because I hate electoral politics. I really despise electoral, but I love party politics. And, man, we were so close. We could. It was there. And it was there in 12, too.
Which is what the threat was, which is exactly right. Why they're dealing with Trump there. The way they are, and having a little contract.
So I was,
what's the
I got
deal?
Yelled
what
at.
The questions
I
are?
I told you what I started at the beginning at. I was pissed, and I got yelled at, right? So what are you going to do? I mean, when an individual makes a decision, they make a decision. It's the end of the story. You can't make people do stuff.
I guarantee, this is my prediction. I guess I say guarantee. Nobody cares what I say anyway. But then I'm going, this is what I anticipate happened. Rand Paul is operating from a box that was negotiated. Guarantee it. I feel in my bones. Uh-huh. There is a deal of what he can and what he cannot say.
And he's
what
young.
What he must say. Okay.
He'll be back. He's young.
Yeah.
Right?
No, think about it. Ron was 88. They built a database from that, became the Ron Paul Freedom Report or whatever the heck it was. That whole thing, you know, the Mises Institute, Lou Rockwell, you know, Kent Snyder doing his thing, you know, all this stuff. This has been a little insurgency inside the system building up. And I knew that this is why I did the Lovelution. I was so confident in doing that for a lot of reasons. But this is the one key thing. We went through the Libertarian gubernatorial race in 94 with John Buttrick. And I didn't have to worry about what he said. Head down, plow, no compromise. Guy, he's a federal magistrate, and the boy's got skills. But he was not. I said, I got one condition. I was county chair. I said, we need you to do this. We invite you to run under the only condition that I have is that you don't leak. I mean, don't say it, whatever, but don't leak. Don't go saying communist crap or whatever. And he's like, silly boy, you have not been libertarian since, you know what. So he was fine. That gave me the power to just put my head down and plow. And we made signs, and we were just real buttheads. I ran for Secretary of State, too. So, you know, they wanted to keep him alive, you know, and that'd been it, you know, if we got lucky. But so I'm going, okay. When Ron, he had already spoken at two of the summits, so I knew what his rhetoric was. I knew what he was going to say, and I knew what would happen if he got on the debate one time. Mm-hmm. They were going to say, you're really a libertarian. And he's going, yeah, and you're really fascist. I mean, you know, so I didn't care. I'm going, good, bring it on. I knew he wasn't going to back down from that. Rand, if he was to do that again, and they got another kind of Lovelution kind of whatever, it wasn't within the confines of the deal, because they already saw what happened. Now they got, because Rand's not there, here comes Trump. Trump is the people's like, you know, I'm going, ooh, I'm going to get some. We get, oh, I'm outside. I'm going, yeah. Perot was the same thing. It was just a populism of, he said the stupidest crap. I mean, but he got up and he's going, you know, debt, and long-term debt, short-term, you know, finance. We've got a debt, mm-hmm. and it's going to happen debt. And I'm going, okay, you know, does anybody care? No, they kick the can down the road, and it doesn't matter until it's going to go insolvent in 2012. Well, guess what? It's 2012. This economy, and what did Ron knew was going to trump everything? The fall of the dollar. He's going, all this stuff doesn't mean squat.
Right.
It's going to be the fall of the dollar. So I'm going, all right, so that's what he's waiting on. Then he goes on, does a Porter Stansberry piece, you know, promoting his book about, here it goes. Internationally, here it goes. So I'm going, all right, here it goes. Where's Rand in this? Rand saw his future inside the machine. My thing was, I've been an activist for a long time. I seize opportunities. One of the opportunities was getting Jeff inside the campaign. I worked hard to get Jeff in, because I knew that he was going to be exactly what they wanted. They wanted an operative at the convention floor level to do some ass whipping. But I knew he was principled. I knew he knew what this was really about. I knew that he knew that this was a philosophical education debate using the philosophy, you know, inside this campaign. Do what they wanted. But so that's why we would communicate, and we were very effective with each other. And Arizona did very well. The point is, they don't know. They don't care. All they wanted, they didn't see how many hundreds of millions of dollars of effort it went in. They didn't care about the Ford. All they wanted to know is, how the hell did we raise all that money for them? And I'm going, God, I got to explain it to you? It was the philosophy.
But they still don't.
I sat there and stood looking right at them, and they looked at me in the face and watched, and they go like, but Ernie, we could save the Republican Party. As if that was a libertarian's freaking goal. I go, you're confused with someone that cares. I'm looking for a wooden stake and a mallet. Mm. I don't care. And they're like, what? And I go, and you think you're going to get all these people to do what you want to save the Republican Party? That's your freaking goal to take it over?
I still want to do that, but...
Peace, man. Power to you, you know? Let me know how it works out. So my thing is that I am now, because I have gone through this, and everybody needed to see this, and the Lucy football thing, Lucy Paul, the reason is it's all timing. And for me, it is an abandonment of the electoral process as a means for social change in this country, in this world, on this planet. It is not. Have we freaking figured it out yet? I'm hoping Dr. Tamburi has figured it out. Well, so I don't waste time on anybody past 30. I'm Logan's Run, man. Screw them.
You know? I love that movie.
I'm going for the young generation next. That's why the project's called Defending Archimedes, the genius of the future. The logo is like two little kids doing the lever world thing. I mean, you know, I'm going, it is generation next. Why? Well, that'll take years. I'm going, yeah. And your point, you know, it's just going to be an abandonment of what they say just doesn't matter. What inspires SpaceX landing, you know, 9 Merlin rocket engines back on the pad to be cheap? I'm going to space. Finally, that is what I put emphasis on with my grandkids. And then we got to worry about robots, clones, and artificial intelligence, which is going to be a coming. And what's going to save that? Elon Musk goes with a bunch of other big brain guys, you know, including Stephen Hawking and friends, $1 billion with a B, you know, back when that used to be money, $1 billion just to have a philosophical standard for artificial intelligence so we're not guaranteed to go extinct.
Right.
I mean, it's a philosophy battle.
And see, if it weren't for Ernie, I'd already have hermitaged out up in the mountains. So you keep me grounded, right, with the positive. But just talk local for a second. What's going on in downtown Phoenix?
What is going on in downtown Phoenix?
Yes, you should.
Yeah, whatever.
They're modifying DNA. They're modifying DNA.
Are you talking
DNA.
About the ASU DNA, the what, research facility
God
thing down there?
Only sequencing. Knows,
sequencing
God
center.
Only knows what they're doing in there, and what if it gets out of the lab? Secondly, exactly 50 miles away, we have one of the largest nuclear power plants in the world. So I'm not saying, you know, I'm not doom and gloom, but I'm also a realist. These are things that no amount of SpaceX, well, maybe the rocket to get off the planet, but no amount of this other stuff can get you away from. Because when they do things like fundamentally change the chromosome sequence of stuff and it gets out into the wild, or you have a can of raid pesticide pointed at every human being on the planet with these, you know, the power station, what happens when there's 2 weeks down and the diesel runs out?
The only thing that is going to save you, the only thing is public opinion. It is not, none of that crap is going to be trumped by a Trump or a vote. It's not going to happen. The only thing is going to be, as it always, always, always has been, is individuals rising up around a philosophy, a movement, an idea whose time
has
come.
That's why I say you keep me grounded. I appreciate that.
There is nothing else. I don't know. Tell me what else. It's a vote. It's a convention. It's a candidate. Is that it? How many times has that worked?
No.
We're ratcheting down into totalitarianism. We rule
so
you.
So let's
kind
go
of
there for a second. So that's another point.
Absolutely.
So when you get to the totalitarian point, who runs the politics? The party.
The party
runs the politics. They control it.
But
I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying that's what happens.
It's like, you know, the R's and D's and everything. It's like two fleas arguing over who controls the dog.
But you're talking electoral politics. You yourself said that the electoral politics is lost. It's already lost. So now, if that's lost, what's left? I'm not saying it's right.
Education.
So if it's party,
the party runs it.
Well, if it's party runs it.
Runs
the system. No, runs the
system.
The mechanism. Okay. Runs the
now,
machine.
Now, this is why you'll hear me talk so much about
for better or worse. I'm not saying it's right.
That's where Trump stands.
Decentralized. At. It cannot be on a certain. When you're doing the education thing, everybody's going, "Oh yeah, Khan Academy is great. Khan Academy's got a lot." I use Khan Academy, but what do they want? Bill Gates gets in with Khan. They come in and they go, we need all of the metrics. We need every little 12-year-old kid to have their own game. They get points for what videos they watch. How fast did they learn a certain concept, the math, you know, discipline. They're right here. They were slow here. Ooh, they skyrocketed here. Got in your permanent record. Thank you, Mr. Bill Gates. I'm going, you have server-based, no matter how great and effective it is, that is one of the most dangerous things I see happen. So I go look at Ron Paul curriculum, same kind of thing. I mean, you know, maybe not as bad, but it's still the same thing. I'm going, no, I need something that doesn't exist now, as far as I know. I need decentralized, encrypted. I'm a kid. I get to sign up, do access
I think,
to information.
I think what you're saying about the kids is the most important thing.
Luminosity! Train my brain and
if
have
you go
them
to
know
a
my
school,
brain. How about
you,
not?
If you do this stuff those online or you go to a school, they're literally observe the child through a camera, taking full biometrics year over year over year. Their psychological profile. It's the Clinton thing all over again. The school to work and goal 2000.
We just found out.
They're gonna peg kids in first grade to the jobs that they're allowed to have when
they're
graduating.
United Kingdom's already doing it. United Kingdom, they're doing DNA. We got to get that William Wallace gene out of the freaking whatever. We're going
to
breed
so
that
boy
out.
Going back to the gene thing,
absolutely.
They can now target weaponry.
Attack
down
of
to
the clones. What was the thing in the
down
clones?
Down to the chromosomal level.
What was it? Jenga Fett. Jenga Fett wanted his own Boba Fett, okay? He was the original clone parent. So he has all these guys, and they altered him just a little bit to take orders. Because I want an unaltered clone to be my son, Boba Fett. The whole thing, everything. I go, what if they could change humans just a little bit, with a little bit of in the air, or water, the food, or just throw out some sequencing of whatever the hell. You know, I'm going, yep.
So
they can,
except it's
not. They are.
It's not what if.
Well,
they are.
No, that's exactly.
I think when they screw with genomics too, that's called flipping an oncogene, and these are sequences that can very easily be switched over to cause our carcinogenic effects. So that's one of the problems when you start messing with this. But you know, you were mentioning about with party
is it the
politics.
Problem or a goal? Is it the objective, or is it a side effect problem?
It's not the objective, unless you're the defense department. But
how do you know it's not the objective? What are they doing at TGen exactly? How do you know? Don't assume.
Don't you assume? You're assuming that you're playing the whole, you know,
the head of
black
ASU
helicopter
is Crow,
deal.
Mr. CIA,
so I'm
man,
saying,
I'm
all
going...
I'm saying is that maybe the Defense Department or some other black ops want
Let's
to play
explore
it that way.
That for a minute. Let's explore that for a minute, can we? So let's go back to what Ernie just said.
Look, put it this way. For what it's worth, you know, they're all green aliens.
This is right on the website of the president of ASU. He's the chairman of the board of InQtel.
Right.
He is the chairman of the board
right.
of the agency's investment arm, which mm-hmm. runs TGen, which runs PSEC, the new storage company, and invested in Facebook. And so this isn't Martian land. He's the chairman of the board of InQtel. He's the chairman
and
of
your
the board.
Point, your point?
Well, he runs TGen, and he runs all the military contract research going through ASU.
Right.
Right.
So
exactly what's happening.
I just said if it's the Defense Department, but I'm saying the people that are that the like, I've spoken at health. I can't even talk right now. I spoke at some health conferences, including, I forget the gentleman's name. He's an African-American gentleman. He heads up TGen in the area. Matter of fact, one of his specialties is in prostate cancer sequencing. So I've spoken on the board with him a few times. And, you know, I've gone to lunch with him. And, you know, it's not like, granted, I know, he's not going to sit there over lunch and tell me about how they're creating the new mutagen monster. I get that. But I know enough of the people, at least indirectly and directly, it's not they're sitting around twisting their mustaches. Now,
Campaign for Liberty is. I gotcha.
Campaign for Liberty just doesn't care. They just don't care, right? That's the consensus. They don't care. So my all I'm saying is that those that work in that industry, it's just like Monsanto. You know, you can go that whole route. The people that often are doing the work don't see often what
it's
they're
compartmentalized.
Promoting.
Compartmentalized.
Well, yeah, it is.
That was the word I was going to say. It's compartmentalized.
And these people are doing
this
work.
They don't even know what the people are doing.
What I was pointing out, maybe I'm getting too much into the science, is that when you happen to play with these sequences, you do set up some instability that can flip oncogenes and other problems that have unintended consequences. That's the issue from a genomic standpoint. Now, when you start talking, which I said, that if there's a Defense Department component, which there's no question, I'm sure there is, playing with things, and who knows, then we'll get the Walking Dead virus to come out. I understand that, and I'm not saying there's no connection. But, you know, I just don't always make assumptions on the other end either.
Fair enough.
There is a humanity there. Now, the question I was trying to echo, you mentioned about the party politics, and I agree. You know, you're saying that, you know, the role control is in the party politics. And I think that was, not to rehash it too much, but that's what I saw the advantage with the polls, is that one way or the other, I thought they were going to expose it. And when they pulled out a number of times in different ways, they were giving that part up. And I guess, obviously, on design, because they're thinking they could be part of the system to change it. Well, that's where Trump, the strength is that I knew, like just like Ernie had saw things ahead of time when Ron Paul ran. When Trump ran, I knew he would take off, and everyone, you know, libertarians,
Frank couldn't
liberals,
wait to do the Trump conservatives,
report every Thursday. No, I didn't. You asked me for that. I came.
No,
in,
I thought it was awesome. I did.
I came talking. I came speaking. Actually, it was a show. Ernie would have me on every 6 months or something like that, and I talked about medicine or whatever it was, Obamacare, or we were just chatting about some things. And I mentioned, I think Donald Trump just threw his hat in the ring. I guess he should wear a hat with that hair. But I wound up making a comment that he's going to take off, and you know, Ernie was like, you know, I was surprised everyone, the liberals and the conservatives, were all making jokes about it, and a lot of my other friends, you know, libertarian friends, and I just kept thinking, like, well, what is that? Why does I have this feeling, and no one else seems to share it?
Oh no, I knew.
Then it took off in such a way. But my issue with my thing with Trump is that I know one way or the other, it's going to expose the system. That either I knew he'd be taking off, and if he took off, eventually, if he got to that point for the nomination, they would find a way to stop it. We already got a harbinger.
Or level four. Here's level four. If he makes it that far. They'll get their guy in his VP.
Exactly.
And then they'll John Hinckley him.
There we go. Exactly. So they're either going to do a number four. They'll, you know, hate to say it, and a lot of people are saying it. I'll say it on the air. So I'm not afraid of this stuff. Someone will assassinate him if he gets too close. They will, you know, they'll stop him at the convention. They'll all of a sudden just change the rules on him, whether it's the brokered convention that they're already, you know, they're hinting about. And we know something was said behind the scenes because of the last debate, both Carson and Trump are, oh, we love the Republican Party now. They wouldn't say anything.
Yeah.
I know that they're going to, the people finally are going to see the broken nature of the party.
Are when you going to see it?
When Ron Paul, when Ron Paul ran, I was excited because I thought he would help expose that. And he did not for a few reasons. One was he was able to make it so far. Also, I think it's not Ron Paul's fault, but he's not the cure of Donald Trump, and he didn't have the money to keep fighting the system, and his demeanor wasn't that. Okay, Trump, you screw him over, he's going to counterpunch back. You know, Ron Paul gets screwed over, and he would just say, "Well, you know, they're just not ready
for
my message yet."
I wish he'd just stayed in and done exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, so
just
shut up.
But the Republicans were still part of the establishment. The average Fox News guy, which unfortunately I watch Fox News, I'm not a Fox guy. Trust me.
So we don't.
So you don't have to watch it. That's the joke.
Jeff looks like a Fox News watcher.
Yeah, but I
watching, well, I watch CNBC for the business.
When I'm watching this stuff, the thing is, they were all establishment. I mean, O'Reilly, they're all establishment. And I knew Ron Paul was always not, right? They'd always tweak the polls to make it look like it was, and they would never give him coverage. And it was infuriating watching. That was bad for my blood pressure, you can imagine. So now with Trump, what's fascinating is because of the groundwork that Ron Paul had put in, and activist groups like Freedom's Phoenix and others, that now, you know, Federal Reserve and printing money and these cliches are now out there. And that set the stage for Rand Paul, who dropped the ball. Hence, he fumbled, and Donald Trump picked it up, and he's running for the end zone. And that's exactly what happened. Now, Donald Trump, though, has the money and the charisma and the ultimately, you know, he has the public recognition.
And I agree with you there.
This party.
He deserves the credit
and
for doing that.
Yeah, but he's going to show the corruption of the party. And that is why I think this is very profound, because you said it's the party.
I don't think that's going to happen, though.
The party's playing the strings, and Trump's not the puppet. That is the conflict that this is going to show. That's the showdown.
And I have to admit, I mean, your insight is keen, right? And you picked it. But I think you're more optimistic than I am. I think his payoff is the money, and I don't think he's going to make
money. He doesn't need the money. It doesn't matter.
Well,
this is for money?
He's a businessman.
No, he has a goal, and whatever it was, this is what I said in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I go, Trump, whatever it is that he wanted, he just got it. Whatever it was. I have no idea what it is, but I looked at it, and I could see. I tell you what it equates to. You have the big powerhouse. You have the Western Central Banking of the Banking of International Settlements et al. Then you have the BRICS over here, and they're all just negotiating for who gets to sit at the big mahogany table of we rule you. And I'm going, Trump is in the same category. For him, he wants whatever to make America great, and you're not doing it. I'll show you how to do it. I'm going to do it. And what's going to happen? In the end, they're going to merge, and there is going to be a deal struck, because the last deal is that, you know, it's like horse heads in your bed. It's like, you know, your brains are your signature on the signature kind of crap. These guys do not mess around, and they'll go, oh, well, they would never do that. The hell they wouldn't. You know, those won't leave us alone. This is on a much larger scale. It is more than the Republican or the Democratic nomination. It's even more than the central banking.
Right.
It's more than the R's and D's. It is a battle for, as Alex Jones would say, for your mind. This is just opinion. And everybody's like, Ernie, well, it's just opinion. Yeah, it's just your opinion. And what do they do to get you to change your opinion? They have to have your eyeballs and your ears. And they are losing that. Newspapers are going out. You can see it's like the penny saver now is the freaking Arizona Republic. Why they're losing money? Why are they there? Because they're owned by Gannett. Gannett has USA Today. They need to have the front page on your driveway. Get free take. Look at this. Newsweek, buy it for a dollar so I can put Obama on the front page. I mean, at the airport, it's all about space in your brain. And that's all that they care about. So now what happens? Hulu has no commercials. Now it's got 2-3 commercials. You don't want to see this commercial space. How much do I got to pay to not have commercials? I mean, you know, this is, I can see what's happening. So now, where do they get the kids? Where do they go? Where do they have Facebook? It's on the internet. It's what searches you do. So what's the solution? To extract yourself from the system. And the system has nothing to do with politics. It has to do with your opinion. Who do you vote for? Who do you do? How do you go? And then you see, when we had Vote This Time It Matters, that logo you see on my Ernest Hancock, you know, and it has the little Minuteman there, that was a logo also that said, Vote This Time It Matters. It, like the vote superimposed, long story. When I did that, I'm going, the reason I thought that it mattered, 1990, is they allowed finally for people to register themselves without having to go to a deputy registrar from the parties. And they'll go, why isn't there any libertarians? Because only Republicans and Democrats could register people. What the hell did you think was going to happen? So then they started being able to register yourself. Here it goes. Then what do? The whole system was rigged. They went to computer voting. I'm going, look, this whole thing is geared as just a distraction to get you to think you have the illusion of choice. So when the Matrix series came out, and I'm going, did I see what I just thought I saw? Hell yeah. Finally, the Wachowski brothers, whatever the hell they are. I go, these guys, they actually demonstrated what I've been thinking. Take the blue pill, take the red pill. V for Vendetta. What was that all about? We created a false flag of all these kids died from the disease, and they had the cure. What the hell you think they're doing now? It'd be the same kind of thing. It'll be, God knows whatever the hell it's going to be, and I'm going, the only thing that's going to save us from this, stop wars, home educate, the insulation of Generation Next, that has always been my focus. And I'm just waiting for the right time. And what they have to do, all the population around the world has to finally realize it's broke. It's meant to be broke. It is just another way of conning us. And when you realize that, all of a sudden, this big giant burden is lifted off your shoulders. And whether you work inside like Jeff does or totally outside like I do, that doesn't mean that we can't work together. And the problem is people inside that think they're going to fix it. You're not going to. It's not meant to be fixed. They will spend any and everything. There will be mushroom clouds. There will be walking zombies. It will take whatever the hell it takes for it not to get fixed. And I'm like, oh, I can't scream it loud enough, often enough. So what do? I provide a base, an alternative, another method, an encouragement, an inspiration. Yes, you can do something. But if you think you're going to fix or even expose it, you're like, look how I'm all about exposing it. Because when you expose it, you're going, God, this sucks. We should do something else. Yeah. You know, so I'm go, man. Go get inside. Watch that sausage being made. Man, I'm going to go be a sausage maker for a while, and you'll figure it out. It's human DNA. So I'm going, I'm very optimistic only because they're so bad.
So
government's a recruiter for liberty.
on that point, you know, about being bad, there's something interesting about that. They're actually extremely predictable because bad guys.
Thank you.
Bad guys. Guess what they're going to choose?
They got a default lie because they don't know anything.
Right.
If the truth would benefit them, they lie.
They're going to do the wrong thing on a truly moral basis. They're always going to choose to do the wrong. So you can actually.
I can't say that. Even though it would benefit me because it's the truth.
Extremely predictable. And me even saying this isn't going to change that. They're going to do to the point where you know the logical three possibilities of their next step, so you can preempt that net. Those three possibilities are three more.
3D,
right? And
like
then,
wrestling.
And
3D.
Then you can project out on a wall diagram that if it goes down route A and you have this preemptive move, that they're going to pick one of these next three steps, and you can preempt those. It's amazing.
Okay, now this is one thing and you probably understand this more than most. I always equated it like high school wrestling. If I had a move, a counter move, a counter move to that counter move, you go three deep. They're like mumbling. I mean,
they can't get past three.
They're pinned, okay? Mm-hmm. They can't get past. It's like, okay, well, I think this about that. Why? Because Rush Limbaugh and Trump said
it's circulating.
And
it circles back.
I go, no. But what about, that's the second one. You get in the third one, you get logic, principle, example, and they're like.
Any human mind can't get past principle. But it's still challenging. It's still hard.
Leave me aloneism. I don't know. Where's the gun in the room? Who's coercing me? Who's the one, a proper role of government is like, let me pursue my own happiness without bothering anybody. All these simple, uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies, reigniting the flames of freedom. I mean, I understood this from activism, from being frank. I went through this, the injustice of it all. I spent everything that I had, my wife and I, doing lawsuits against a big, bad federal government. I went straight federal court, man. I'm pro se litigant. If I'm going, woo, kick your ass. Why? Because I couldn't get an attorney. I had money back then. You know, we had our business started. I'm going, man, I'll just hire an attorney. John Buttrick, before we did, it was like a couple of years before I knew, I was just suggested that I call him by some libertarians. And they go, you need to talk to John. And John, straight up, he goes, you are not going to find an attorney to challenge the electoral process. It ain't going to happen. I go, yeah, but there he goes, it's not going to happen. Yeah, but he goes, it's not going to happen. Duh, get over it. His firm was what? He's the only libertarian there. And who's there? It's all Democrats because they were hooked up with Babbitt, who used to be governor. So he's the lone black sheep of the whole thing to begin with, but they respected him. He went on, he ran. I've been through this so much. I'm telling you, Frank, you're getting upset about the wrong thing. The thing is you shouldn't be angry at them.
Who's them?
the party, Campaign for Liberty, candidates, anybody that promises, what, they're alligators. They go, what'd you think I was? I'm an alligator. The eaches are taking you across the stream. Okay, they go, I'm an alligator. So quit getting mad at alligators for being alligators. You need to just take what you're doing in your field of prostate cancer, the boards that you're running on, the speeches that you give to the party, them telling them about Obamacare, the principles that you're doing. You are gazillion times more effective doing exactly what you're doing as a professional in your field and explaining to people what's happening economically, all the students that you professor to. All of this is enormously more effective than trying to fix a system that is not meant to be fixed.
Wait, you guys, I think, keep making the wrong assumption that I'm this upset about that component. Just because I talk loud doesn't mean I am. I think you're...
This means you're Italian?
You don't understand where the frustration
yes.
is.
Yes.
It's not about... It's. I know you're not going to fix it. That... I guess my point doesn't... Never seems... I'm not making
Say
it right.
It. I'm listening,
it's
man.
The point of... It wasn't with Ron Paul, for instance, trying to get him to win. It's just like what you said yourself. It's exposing the lies in the system. Uncovering the
and
lies
keep your
and exposing
word.
It. That, to me, is what the Ron Paul issue was. And I looked at, I want to say Jeff specifically, but a lot of the CFL and other groups, when they got involved in the system, as I did too, it wasn't, I was different than a lot of them running or trying to get involved because they thought he was really going to win. I knew he wasn't. I was part of the system to learn from the inside, to
influence
my win
was
people
totally
inside.
Different.
It wasn't to win. A lot of the CFL people and the other Ron Paul people, they were really like, oh, yeah, this is we're going to take it over. We're going to win. I'm like, no, it's not going
to
happen. I knew
give
that.
A finger to the convention at the convention.
That.
That's all I already
knew it was politics.
I wanted to win.
I know you did. But I know. That's the difference. That's my point is that you now, maybe you've seen it differently now. I knew that then. I knew it wasn't going to win. To me, because I've been doing it since I was 18. I just wanted to finally expose to some degree. I know it wasn't going to change. I mean, you might make the assumption that it's somehow, ta-da, finally the curtain comes and everyone goes, wow, it is corrupt, and then it all changes. I'm not that obtuse to that. I'm not that obtuse for Jeff or either one of you. It's the issue that when you first expose it, the crack in the wall occurs. Just like what you're doing for a lot of the younger people. I'm doing this also. I'm looking for that crack for a lot of older people. People in my dad's generation, or let's say over 30, 40, you know, a lot of people that already bought into how the system works. It's just trying to expose that there is, that it's not what they thought. People who don't even vote who just think somehow it works out. People who think the debt clock keeps going up and somehow it just works out. You know, the fact that when they vote for something, it's supposedly, you know, their vote actually works, or the primary is a fair process. And, you know, if Ron Paul, if the libertarians are not on the national debate, it must be because I guess they weren't that good. That somehow they don't ask the question how and who's controlling these things. And Ron Paul had the opportunity, figures he walks out at this point with his phone call, which I understand, but that Ron Paul had that opportunity to do that and didn't. That's what, that to me was the missed opportunity. I'm not, you know, obtuse to this concept that they were going to win and they're going to fix everything. Everything would be exposed. It was just a national platform to start to show the problem. And Donald Trump is the next manifestation where he's taking it, not for the young youth that Ron Paul exposed.
Oh, no, he's doing for Trump.
Donald Trump. Trump is doing it now. I mean, he's doing it for Fox News. I mean, to have this discussion about the establishment versus non-establishment, which is exactly the point I want to make to him. But the fact that we're having that discussion even on Fox that you guys don't watch is astounding.
The discussion happened. The discussion happened
Jeff,
on
just,
Fox.
That's
the
right.
discussion happened
I'll
on Fox
you.
When you had them going, oh, well, that just must be text messages of just a bunch of people in their basement doing, and Ron Paul didn't really win. Everybody goes, right. That must be a Google trend of they just pretending that people are searching the Ron Paul, the Levolution, it doesn't count. Well, that must be, everybody knew they were lying like crazy, but they don't care. They're the people that they're amping up. The people that are on the talk show, the people that were calling in, the people are that small percentage. I operated from this understanding in my lawsuit. When you do discovery and you go through all the bottom line, came down to this. I saw that out of 100% of the people in this country, only got over half or something are able to even vote.
okay? 60% or something like 70%. They're old enough. They're not felon. They, you know, didn't smoke marijuana. I mean, whatever. So you got all these people at 60, whatever, 70%. Then you get half of them, if that, to register. No, just to register. Just to register. You know, so you got of the population, you got 35-40% of the people register. Then how many of them actually vote? And then how many of them for the winning side? You're down into the teens at best, representing everybody else. And I go, who gives a shit about them?
That's why you only need to manipulate 1-2% of the vote on the margin to win.
Don't even care about that. I'm the they operate in an ocean of opinion. Yeah, they operate in an ocean
in a cloud.
Of common, like this cloud, cloud of opinion. And I'm going, yeah, you guys keep worrying about that. I'm over here doing the opinion thing. So then they go like, I can't tell you how many times Jeff hears it. You know, Ernie and his people, Ernie and his people. You know, here in the Arizona legislature, Ernie and his people. They assume I dissect every, I don't give a crap about these people.
Because that's what they do.
Yeah. So they go, well, Ernie and his people did this. And I'm going, and I look at them, and they'll catch me at whatever. We're at different. I'm going, God, you guys don't get it, man. There is no Ernie's people. That's what you guys do. They have to put a label on it. They can't think any other way. Yeah. There's always some suitcase. It's just opinion. What they're really saying is this opinion that Ernie keeps advocating, this opinion that he gives voice to, this opinion that he nurtures, this opinion. I'm going, damn, Skippy. That's exactly. Thank you for your
then you were successful.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Screw them. Jeff, what legislation did you get?
I just want to reiterate the point, because you had to step out. It was kind of the key point I was trying to get across with Trump, is that, you know, with the polls, it was, I understand that the system's busted with it. And I know it's not all going to be exposed like somebody, you know, all of a sudden turns on the light and everyone, the whole world goes, aha, it's
and
all.
The roaches scatter.
Exactly. I know it's much deeper than that. It's not that simplistic, clearly. But Ron Paul was able to expose enough in the beginning to a lot of youth. People getting involved like yourself, too. Getting involved thinking, this is how it works. This is what a PC is. This is what we need to do. And then they would turn the lights off on us, right? You know, they wouldn't allow the count the votes like in Nevada, and you sit there and you watch this thing happen. Now, does the average person on Fox know that at the time that my family, the people see this? No, you had to be there. But now the youth, now with social media, it's a whole other world where they can sit there and take pictures of this and show. And it's not that that's one part of the system. I think sometimes he thinks that the system is really going to change, or people can expose the system there. But it's a cultural issue that I agree with Ernie, that if enough people start to realize it's broken and that you can start to you can track it, you can watch it, you can put it online, create a narrative, then it begins to expose how corrupt it is. Wait, one last point, and that's the youth. So the Ron Paul campaign or the movement took what was before the internet, that you couldn't get this message out, like with Perot, and now with the internet, Ron Paul is able to expose it to the next level. Now, then comes Trump, and Trump is doing it now for the older population, people who swore that there was nothing wrong with the party during the Ron Paul years. You know, when I would sit there and we watch the polls, remember, and the corruption on Fox, they would just ignore him. The corruption that was occurring with to put Mitt Romney in, I was aghast, and Republican Fox listeners would constantly say that we're a bunch of whiners of Ron Paul, and there's nothing wrong, and it's all fair, and it wasn't. Now it's their turn, because now they're seeing this with their guy of Trump. This is my whole point with all
this. That's a good point.
And Trump is now taking it to the next level. And now Fox, the average Fox person, is starting to talk about the establishment and non-establishment. During Ron Paul, there was no discussion.
Now
the average Fox person is discussing something because they didn't know there was a split in the party. They didn't realize why when they put David Schweikert and other people in office, nobody could do anything. John Boehner controlled everything, right? Now John Boehner gets thrown out. That's because of Trump.
They pass a budget. And they just, you know, spending the whole budget.
Yeah, I know, I take some calls, but
you know, we'll survive. At least they got to hear that. The politicians, you know, now they get rid of Boehner. They put Ryan in. This is kind of what was the deal, you think, Jeff, with getting right? What was he supposed
to
do?
Throwing out.
Well, I mean, for what? He just passed a button, didn't, no discussion of kind of goes and overspends until September we don't care.
That's easy. When you're House Speaker, you get an extra $100,000 a year for the rest of your life.
No way.
Yes.
Extra?
Extra.
Above.
$100,000 for the rest of your life. And your
pick
budget, your budget doubles or triples or quadruples. That's easy, man. And he just built a big wall around his house. So can I get back to the system for a second? Can I ask a question about the system? So maybe it's my engineering brain. So you say the system's broken. You say the system's broken.
I didn't say it's broken. It's broken like the education system.
No, wait
broken.
A minute. Wait a minute.
That's what they want.
So I'm going to ask a rhetorical question, and I'll make a point, and I'll try to take less than a minute. Broken versus what? So let me give you an example. This, I'm pointing at Ernie's computer, is a system.
Shit, which one?
This phone is a system. This board is a system. This is a system over here. There's a system inside of this box. Mm-hmm. So they're not broken. They might not operate how you like. That give you the outcome you want. But they're working exactly as designed.
Exactly. As working as designed. Over time.
So that's my engineering background and my engineering brain. It's that you thought it was designed to do something else. It's not. It's operating under to spec.
Okay, did you see the movie
And
Meet
so
John
to
Doe?
Me, to me, so I'm sorry, you want to operate outside the system? I just see a bunch of different systems. This system does a certain thing. That system, you use systems to per spec to get the output that you need at the time. Right?
Yep.
That's what it is.
Oh, no. They go, Ernie, well, you don't like pot. Why do you run all the time?
You're getting that. You get a certain outcome system, that you're looking for.
And it works for that. I get to stand on this soapbox and yell at these
theory,
guys. Okay, I
now,
do this.
Now, before you jump on me, assuming that I'm naive with this is not my point. But the system is supposed to represent, at least those that feel that they're the majority. Now, I understand, before you even go into how, La La Land that is as far as how it's really designed underneath. I get all of that. But the average American, or a person from other culture, that's what they believe. And before the internet and before, the ways that we can expose and see this with television and just everything we can see now, that system, the real system, was basically the dark system, the dark government, and the game. Even if it was actual rules and laws that people just didn't know how it really worked, like how a brokered convention could work, that's completely legit. It's right in there, right? People just don't understand how that works, and when push comes to shove, they can just negate your vote and do what they want.
I gotta tell you
so
this.
All I'm saying is that now there's enough. Exposure and enough people getting involved, and now technology, I can't stress enough, is finally exposing it in different ways, where now the people, like Ernie's view, which is the culture changes, enough people say enough with the damn system, and they, of course, he won't like this part, create either a new system, because you always need some kind of system. Something has to. You can't just have straight anarchy.
What Ernie doesn't like, engineering background, right, is systems are in nature.
Absolutely. Systems theory.
So there's no way to not have.
Okay, I'm going to give you an example.
System for people, and we redo it.
I want to give an example, okay? Perfect example. Because the system in the GOP sucks so much, mm-hmm, here comes Nixon. They do wage and price controls. They created OSHA. They do all kinds of nefarious, we're done. They create the Libertarian Party. They put in, we're going to create a better system, all right? So what did they do? In the initial it takes 7/8 in convention to change this mission statement, the statement of principles. You want to make this Libertarian Party be whatever you want to? Fine. Get 7/8 in convention, which they try every convention to do to keep building up. Now it doesn't matter. Nobody cares. It was this statement. We, the members of the Libertarian Party, oppose the omnipotent state, okay? Support the rights of the individual and oppose the omnipotent state, all right? So I'm going, this omnipotent state, and there's more to it, something like that. And I'm going like, okay, the all-powerful, all-knowing state is what they're saying, and support the rights of the individual. That needed to be taken out because they didn't want the mission statement of the party to be a principled statement like that. They did everything they couldn't get a change in convention there, so they changed the bylaws that says the purpose of the Libertarian Party is to get elected. Okay?
They passed all this culture thing. No more education stuff. We need to be about elections. This fight went on through the 90s and the 2000s.
That fight happens in the Republican Party, too, constantly.
Are you
a platform conservative?
Yeah, no. It depends on the nominee. They have the platform. They change it and do whatever they want because this guy's running, and we need to change it because this guy's running. They do the same thing with Bob Barr. In 2006, I'm like, here we freaking go. This was the whole reason I ran for national chair four times. I'm going, I know what you want to do. We challenge the cult of the omnipotent state and defend the rights of the individual. What challenging of the cult with Bob Barr? Are you freaking kidding me? So they changed the bylaws to say, but the mission we have to, we do everything we can to get elected. Well, you just threw all that crap out the window now. So I'm going, you guys got to be kidding me. So now we have all these parties. What are they there to do? They're there to get their guys elected, to get hold of the trillions of dollars. Trillions. This is what this whole thing is about. And if you think some little whatever, and I get a call from someone, I got to call her back. She was inside the party. She wanted to let me know just last week she called me, and I didn't return the call because I basically don't care. She said, the Koch brothers are coming back to take over the Libertarian Party. Now, a lot of people don't know. David Koch ran as VP in 80. You know, they put, you know, these guys, because they couldn't take over the Libertarian Party from the hippies that wouldn't change all this stuff, all the principled Rothbardian guys, that's where Cato came from. So this is, you know, people don't know the history of this. You look at Brian Doherty from Reason Magazine wrote a book on the radical something, you know, and you get all this kind of history on this stuff. But I just, the only reason I get it is because you meet with these people, and I just don't care, you know. And then, so I'm, we've gone real long here. I know everybody's, you know, got it. But I give everybody closing. I think this was a very good discussion from guys that have been involved inside, you know, doing this stuff. And we each have different methods, I think, of obtaining the same goal. Some of us are afraid. The future of humanity, not just this country. I mean, there are some real existential threats of oh my godisms, and I'm going, all right, what is the solution? Well, from my personal experience, it sure as crap is not electoral politics. From me, I can use that as a mechanism for what? For people knowing that there is a problem, as Frank would articulate. Okay, now what? Well, we got to get a better system. No, systems are the problem. So it's individual personal education, and you start where the low-hanging fruit is, the young children that know right from wrong. It has to be beaten out of them in junior high, the Hitler youth, of I'm just a bill, and this is right and wrong and politically correct if they didn't say it, and you respect your space of offended, blah, 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 and that is how they're winning. You stop that. That's where I'm focusing. That's what I'm working on. That's where I get my support from. That's why we do what we do. It is for that reason. And there are steps because I'm patient. And I'm telling you, there is going to be a big, giant change. And the big, giant bad guys don't want it to. And they will do any and everything to stop the evolution of humanity towards a power of the individual in a group of just community, with the individual being the promised pursuer of their happiness, which is what this country was based on, and they're taking that away. And here come the robots, clones, and artificial intelligence. And the only thing that can trump that is not Trump. It's love. Go, Jeff.
I gotta go, but thanks for having me, and here's the last, you can read that.
Okay.
Gotta go. Thanks, guys.
He won't read it.
It's a pleasure. Let's chat on different times here.
It's a Walker Bush corporate board member of somebody, direct employee of the CIA, whatever the heck. The next president will be one of these, okay? There's a cutout of, you know, somebody just, you know, because they'll do what they're told, and a you know, or they'll get a corporate person in as VP. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, and I know it's always been that, so that's an easy call. Thanks, Jeff. Peace, brother. All right, you get last, man. Go.
Well, I want to agree with Jeff about the AI and robots. And genetics, he's completely right. I wish it was here before it took off. We actually have agreement on that. You know, people think it's all sci-fi, but I think it's probably the most daunting problem facing humanity eventually and not too far in the future. Second, I would agree with you that we are about to hit a reckoning on all sorts, on basically a global scale, especially here in America. So much of this will probably be much ado about nothing. As far as the system, you know, maybe it's a different word for another discussion. You know, it's not I want to take one government and throw it in with another equally complicit, complicated government. At the same time, you know, at the end of the day, whether you want to use the word system or something else, you know, in my belief, you cannot have anarchy. Everyone just having their own plot of land, doing whatever completely. It'd be nice to have that, but the minute you try to do that, you would be taken over by someone else that doesn't believe in free rights and anarchy. So some semblance to something, whether it's a takes a little small village, whatever, that's another discussion. But when I mean system, it's not that I'm trying to, you know, say, well, I'll just build another whole government from scratch and make it as bad as ours and have the same follies and trappings. So that's a loaded topic, but I just want to make that point. And then also, you know, overall, you know, Trump, believe it or not, and again, I keep missing, he's just been distracting, you know, with all that we went so long today, but, you know, Trump scares me. I mean, that's what people don't seem to understand. It's not that I support him. He thinks that, you know, I got lost from Rand to Trump. You know, I have not given my support for Trump necessarily. I support his campaign, maybe not necessarily him for president this time, but he scares me in the potential because of the system of what we've had so far getting to this point. You know, this is in history. History shows this is the time that a dictator can take over. I mean, all the things, everything's in place. Not to mention the liberals, the last number of years, accepting executive action, executive order with Obama's pen as much as he has. All of that.
Gun control is coming real soon that way.
Yeah. And I've said, you know, you liberals think it's funny that he just executive orders everything. I said, wait until the Republicans' turn now gets in. And if it's someone like Trump who just basically says, I'm going to do whatever I need to do, and the American people, through this populism, give them the keys to do that. With that precedent of executive orders, you know, and then the economy falls apart and people say, whatever it takes.
Chancellor, here's your power.
Absolutely. And I really wish Jeff was here to hear that point, because I don't think Jeff really understands my position. He, you know, it's the first time her and I got to know each other on the air, and he's making a lot of assumptions, which I could tell if he hears the tape again about really who I am and what my positions are. He's making jump to a few conclusions, I think, but yeah, you know, he's not here to defend himself. But that's kind of the point. That's where I'm coming from with this. It's how, you know, it's how the Trump phenomena has shown itself, and the fact that Rand Paul is only at 3 and going down, and Trump keeps going up, and everyone thought opposite. You know, the question is, someone's obviously wrong in their assumptions. And if some people want to get into the weeds about how things are and how the manipulation is and how the game works, you can play the game all you want. Trump's not playing the game, and you're seeing those numbers reflect that.
Rand assumed that if he played ball, that he would do better. And I don't know why he had that, what evidence he based that on.
Right.
And it was because he was given a box or a playbook from which to operate. Who's his mentor? Who did he follow? Who did he go to bat for? Who did he fall under the wing of? Mitch McConnell. You know, his fellow U.S. Senator from Kentucky. What the hell was that about?
Mm-hmm.
You know what he said and did? I'm going, you know, you're done. Well, the secret, and I don't give a crap, but the secret, I think their secret was going to be they're going to tell me how real anarchist he is, you know? And I'm like, right, you know, I don't, because Dr. Paul, during the campaign, said, yeah, I'm a voluntarist. Anything peaceful and voluntary, that's, you know, Declaration of Independence, Constitution, that's what it was supposed to be about. They've been, you know, bastardizing it into whatever the hell they want to do. So I'm just going, no, they're playing the system, like somehow they're going to use the system. The system was only there to, like you say, to be made fun of and exposed, or used to just get. I get, you know, here in Arizona, they changed the law. There's all kinds of lawsuits going on. They do not want libertarians on the ballot. Why? Because senior editor Freedom's Phoenix at the time, Pal Gamel, threw it to the Democrat and they blame the libertarians. How about because you're freaking suck as a candidate? How about it? They got a black mayor from Paradise Valley couldn't, you know, beat, you know, a white lesbian girl, you know, for Congress. They're pissed off. And I'm going,
you know, you're confusing me with someone that cares. And what did Pal Gamble do? He got on the debates televised. And he goes, it doesn't matter. Don't waste your vote. Make it count. Stay home. Do something productive. This is all he said, and he got 7-8%. They're freaking out. How the hell did you get so high? I ran for against John McCain, U.S. Senate in 04. I got all these conventions asking me to come speak at their convention to tell them how I got the highest third party in the nation for a federal race. How did you do? I told people to not vote. Never mind. We don't need you. Thank you. Because they're not looking for the right thing. They're, you know, the opinion, it's demonstrated there. The revolution was there. They don't care because that's not what they want. They want, this is my voting block influence of database, and we can use it to raise money. And this is the influence that we got. They're in the system, and the system's going to get bypassed by all kinds of stuff. And I just got to be happy about SpaceX landing Falcon first stage at Cape Canaveral last night. Na, 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 na. And we'll end on that. You know, so Thursday you're going to take off. We're not doing Trump report.
I don't know. It depends.
Come on! Oh, come on!
I need a break.
I know we did. Okay, we'll
I need a whiskey sour.
Yeah. You know, we don't do it. Yeah, I was really liking Fireball cinnamon whiskey, and found out it's got what the phenyl glycol got some antifreeze in it for taste. Yeah, they pulled it in Europe, and then the FDA here goes, "Oh no, it's okay for food here in America." You know, it's a flavoring. And I'm like, you know what? I just should not have antifreeze in my fiery urn nog. You know?
Well, thanks for having me, Ernie. I know it was technically a Jeff Greenspan show to be able to get him on here, but it was nice to be able to at least go a few rounds.
No, I think it was informative. This is, these three positions are well represented. Four positions. Your father, thank you, Frank, for doing it. This, you needed to be represented. This is, you know, but the fact that I would, you know, one, he's like, yeah, well, what'd you expect? They're politicians. And I'm like, you know, what'd you expect? It's an organization. It always comes down to the individual's opinion. That's the only thing I can count on. And that's where Donna.
I'm just
going to
vote Hillary and get this thing over with.
Hey, well, Donna, remember in 96, I'm going, well, let's just vote for Clinton so we can hurry up and get to a police state so we can leave. And she's wanting to do it. But I take that back. It's going to get pretty rough. But I think it's all going to get, you know, just trumped. You know, by the dollar or a mushroom cloud or whatever. But peace. War is over if you want it.